sports information you can't live without is right here on Sportsnet Today. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. Oh, baby, it's our time. The Masters are in full swing. The Leafs made a minor move that we could take 97 different directions. We can read way too much or way too little into it. And it's so nice outside, Sam McKee wants to do weather talk. So really, it's just the hat trick for us to start the show. McKee, how you doing, bud?
Buddy, I'm doing spectacular. It's, you know, it's moving day. At the Masters, tons of great names in the leaderboard. It's going up to a high of 22 in the city of Toronto today. I know there's not a lot to do, but you can still do stuff outside. So, you know, go out there, enjoy the day. Maybe get on your bike. Maybe go for a walk. Just wear a mask. Do what you want to do, but it's just be outside. It's okay. So that's my advice to you. Secondly, I just want to say, what a spectacular debut episode of The Gaul Show with you, Hugh Burrell, and Brent Gunning. Our great friend, Scott Metcalf, my old boss at 680 News, did an unbelievable job on that show for a very long time. And it was great to produce it with him for the past couple of years. But we've moved into a new era of it. And you guys just knocked it out of the park. I think it was all the guests booked by me. So I loved that show. So, yeah, there we go. Just wanted to get that out of the way, too. But, boy, oh, boy, it is our time, Gunner. And we can talk about the Masters here for a little bit. I know you just talked about it for an hour. I know you could talk about it for 8 hours. So let's get into it. But boy, oh boy, what a start. What a Thursday, Friday, setting up a spectacular moving day, like I said.
Okay, so I want to talk about a lot of things, and you're going to roll your eyes that this is where I want to start, but I feel like we cannot miss it. Siwoo Kim broke his putter on one of the most famous golf holes in the world and then proceeded to putt better than his playing partners on one of the most famous par threes in the world with a three wood at the Masters. Like, can you imagine what is going through his head as he's sitting there? Like, it's one thing, you're mad, you snap the putter. Okay, we've all done dumb thing when we're mad and gone, oh man, now I have to deal with the consequences of this. This is not good. He had an hour and a half, if not, to think about it. And he had to think about it every single time he pulled the three wood out of his bag. I cannot. It's hilarious. I will never stop thinking about this.
So there's a couple things that I want to talk about with that. The first thing is the broadcast was all over him. They're like, oh, I'm sure he's feeling a little embarrassed about that.
And Trevor Immelman with, it didn't make it past the three putt. Very cryptic.
and they're like, Curtis Strange, what do you think about that? He's like, well, I've done that before, not at the Masters, but I've done that before. So immediately he was sort of, you know, defending him a little bit, but like, yeah, you don't break your putter. Like I'm kind of on their side of, come on, bro. Like that's, yeah, you three putt. It happens. Like you're in the mix. That's kind of an embarrassing move. But then to make the par,
rolling it,
like he almost nailed that birdie putt on 16. It was very, very close, and I love this guy's game. I know Hugh Burrell picked him there. This guy has a real game that he's kind of underrated, I feel like. I think he's got, what, 4 or 5 wins on tour? Like, the guy can really play. So I feel like he's sort of undervalued, underrated heading into the weekend, and he's going to have a putter. So that's exciting, but, man, I love it. You know who really loved that? Our boy Eric Prime. He loves the high B from just off the green. So I'm sure him seeing Siwoo Kim putting with a three would really warm his heart. But man, it's so funny that like there's so many amazing things that happen that we're starting with a guy breaking his putter. But man, it was the talk of the town yesterday.
Yeah, I might have sent out texts with like the fire alarm emojis of like, there's a high B putting happening. You need to take this in. All right. That was obviously a little more sideshowy. I will say I have seen reports. I believe the putter has been reshafted and it will be ready to go. So hopefully the shaft is very strong. Seeing what happened yesterday. All right. Let's talk about some other guys. Because again, Siwoo Kim, we're talking about him snapping his putter. But really the story was how well he played. A lot of guys playing well. I mean, where do you want to go? What jumped out to you? I mean, Will Zalatoris has kind of been the talk of the town. Obviously, you mentioned Spieth a little bit. Thomas, where do you want to start?
Well, I don't think we should start with my boy Willie Z, because I don't know if he's necessarily the most, you know, the biggest household name. But I got to say, this guy's kind of been on my radar now for, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks maybe, Willie Zalatoris. And now he is fully not only on my radar, but in my heart. I am a big-time fan of this Will Zalatoris kid. And, you know, a lot of, you know, casual golf fans or whoever kind of just zooms into the Masters here, and that's fine. Like, I'm not getting down on you for that. It's 100% fine. But, like, this kid, that's not a fluke that he's up there. Watching him play yesterday, he put on an absolute stripe show. Driver, everything perfect. Irons perfect. Rolling it sweet. Like, he's not – I really feel like he's an actual threat this weekend, but we don't need to start with him. It's Spieth, right? It's Spieth.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of great names in this leaderboard. You know, you've got Justin Thomas right there. You got a bunch of great guys. You know, I love having Justin Rose up there. I love having the Leishman. I love having the regulars, you know, who are always floating around on the Masters weekend.
Leishman's Barney Gumble of the Masters. It's like, you're still here, Leish?
He's a regular, yeah, 100%. So, but it's Spieth. And, you know, this resurrection kind of started, was it at the Waste Management where he was in contention? He shot, was it the 61 on the Saturday? And that's kind of when everyone was like, oh, Spieth's kind of back here, and it's kind of been leading up to it. He won the Valero last week, and, you know, he had that triple on Thursday on 9 where any golfer can relate to that triple. That's what makes Spieth who he is, because he's got these moments that are extremely relatable. He's kind of the everyman golfer, and he took so much time on that shot. He steps out. He looks at it. He's like, I'm going to hit that tree. He goes back. He's like about to hit again. He steps out. He's like, oh, that tree? That tree I'm going to hit? And he just whacks it hard as he can, hits the tree, and he makes a triple. And the fact that he is 2 shots back of the Masters lead with making a triple on Thursday just tells you where he's at. Without that, if he even bogeys that, he's tied for the lead. So I really think that Spieth doing that and now being in contention still, heading to this weekend, he knows this course. Give me a Sunday lead of Jordan Spieth heading to 12. Give me that. There's no juicier storyline. In the golf world, obviously there's no Tiger this year. We know what happened. There's nothing that's juicier to me in the golf world than him heading to 12 at Augusta with the lead on Sunday.
I don't think I can make the case. If I had to, with the guys that are still kind of floating around, and, you know, I love Thomas. I'd love to see him win, but he doesn't move the needle quite like this. Finau getting his first one, like, me and you are really excited about that, but that doesn't really kind of pull the masses in the way Spieth does. The one thing outside of him, and you're going to love where I go with this, is a special round from Bryson today.
Oh,
and
baby.
Thick Boy is just, it's like Jordan Spieth, golden child, takes the lead into 12, and Bryson is like, I don't know, he's on 15 ahead of him because he teed off a little earlier, and he's got an eagle, and they're here, you're hearing roars, and Spieth's on 12. Like, that's the scene that I think if you could kind of pick of anything going on, that's the one you would end up with. But it's so funny, you mentioned the Spieth thing when he made the triple there. He hit that tree so hard, it sounded like Vlad Jr. barreling something up. it was absurd. And then it cuts both ways, though, right? Like, he makes the triple there, and it's like, oh, if only he had the bogey. It's like, well, he probably should have had another triple when he hit the pin as hard as he possibly could have on 13 and it dropped in. But it's like, I'm not knocking him for that. It's like, golf is all about the breaks you get. Like, that's the whole, if Tiger Woods' ball didn't take one more turn on 16, like, that's the whole sport. So I'm not knocking him for that break. That's the guy. I think the reason why I'm more sold on him heading into the weekend than I was heading into the week. I mean, obviously, when you can start 2 shots back heading into the weekend, that's great for you. But there's just not the huge bombers kind of up there. And Finau hits it a big way. Justin Thomas hits it way past Spieth. But it's not like it is DJ and Brooks and Rory and Bryson. And Spieth has got to deal with all that firepower. Not to say the guys up there don't have game. Of course they do. And the guys chasing him have game. But it's Spieth doesn't – he's not going to be in a pairing where he constantly finds himself 30 yards behind every tee shot. So I think that's the thing that sets up really well for Spieth this weekend, is the fact that he's not going to have to kind of slay the dragon. He has to slay it in terms of getting back to the winner's circle, but there's not some behemoth that he has to really go through.
No, and that's a great point. And I have to be honest, I'm extremely impressed with the way he's hitting the driver, because he's so under control with it. And I don't have the stats in front of me, but like, feels like he's hitting a ton of fairways. Feels like he's really, really been in control with that club. And that, hey, that's always the issue with him, right? If he gets squirrely with the driver, like, we all know about the short game. The short game and the putting is extremely, extremely good. It's just when he gets squirrely with the driver. And, you know, Augusta isn't necessarily the place that's going to punish you for bad drives like a lot of courses will on tour. But you got to be good with it still. And he's been really good with it. And I've loved watching him. I love having him back. I have to admit it. You know, I was never a huge fan of him when he was playing really well, but I took it for granted, right? You take the greatness for granted. And now that he's back, I'm thrilled he's back. And we got to go back to my boy Bryson, because you mentioned.
Hold on. One more thing on Spieth.
Let me have
it. He has to add one more thing to his repertoire, and that is the Tiger go right, go way right. Like, Spieth is hitting it into the trees. He's got to get it over into the, like, what was it, in 2019, he bombed it so far right, and he ended up with a perfect lane into, I want to say, 8 or something like that. That's the shot that he has to add. It's one thing to get a little squirrely. You got to get super squirrely with that driver. But yes, please, Bryson, your
boy. So, I was very, very upset after Thursday because, you know, I got on record. I talked about it in our golf guy video about how I'm doubling down with Thick Boy. I was ready to rock with him, and he just goes out there, and he just was terrible. And he was doing the same thing as he did in November, where he's just off the tee, horrible, just making stupid mistakes in parts of the course. You know, there's nothing worse than when you're sort of a backer of Bryson, and the broadcast always knows how to show him in the worst possible ways. They do it on purpose. They hate his guts, so they try to put him in the worst possible way. Oh, let's talk about how he needs a protein shake, blah, blah, blah. They don't respect him at all. That's a different story for a different day. But he battled yesterday, and he put together an excellent round of golf to shoot a 67. Couple big putts down the stretch. 17 made a putt, 18 with a huge birdie from a really weird spot on 18. He rip pulled a hybrid, I don't even know, into a spot on 18 that I've never even seen anybody in. And then he makes a birdie from there. I really like him heading into today. Because if he, like you said, go out there and shoot the same round you did yesterday, put yourself in the mix, be one of the last three pairings, and you have that power, you have that ability to have a 9-iron in on 13, to have these shots that no other people have, I really like him heading into this weekend. I also have some financial interest in him, so maybe that's as well, a little disclaimer. But I really love Bryce, and I want him there. Glad he made the cut. I just really think that this leaderboard is ideal. Sure, you don't have DJ. I guess it goes back to our conversation about how good golf is right now. Like, yep. DJ doesn't make the cut. Rory doesn't make the cut. Brooks doesn't make the cut. You know, Cantlay doesn't make the cut. I know other people don't really care about Cantlay, but he's kind of in the mix of good players or whatever. And we're still talking about how stacked the leaderboard is. So what a weekend we have heading in here. I really can't wait. Love what Justin Rose did yesterday. Gutsy performance after a really shanky front nine, which the front nine's not treating him too well at Augusta. And guess what? It's hard. That's what it comes down to. But loved his bounce back on the back nine. So we'll see what happens today. But yeah, I've been really loving Justin Rose as well.
Okay, couple things for me on Bryson before we get to Jay's, because obviously there's a ton to get to there. And hey, text line's wide open, 590-590. Please include your name and location on the text line. Been a while since I threw that out. I was very close to throwing out my own cell phone number.
Oh my God.
Would not have been good. That would have been terrible. I mean, I feel like I would have got to the area code and then stopped being like, oh, that's not 590. My thoughts on Bryson, I think you are a little sensitive. The broadcast harps on him a lot, but they show Rory in all the same terrible spots. They were throwing the loop of, he hit his dad. Look how funny. They hammer him,
they don't
him
take
too.
Pleasure in it. Like, they take in that is hammering different. Bryson.
That is fair, but they show him in all the same bad spots. And then the other thing, question for you, how do you feel about Bryson kind of backing off from everything he is? He went hybrid on one yesterday. The round turned out great, so I don't think you can knock it. But the whole point, the entire point of the Bryson machine is I bomb it as far as I want. I go find it. I chop it up close to the green. I get on. I make a putt. Like, that's the whole point. And then him saying, I'm going high. Like, not even 3-wood, hybrid. He goes,
I love it.
On one.
It's an adjustment. He realizes, you know, he knows. Guess what? He goes out there. He's still going to hit drivers today. He's still going to try to do that. But he's a smart guy. He knows that, you know, overpowering some of these holes may not work. So he's going out there. He's doing a little adjustment. He shot a 67. I'm good with it. I'm bullish on Bryson today. I have a feeling that we're going to have a Bryson moment or two today. I really, really do. So
I am not a DeChambeau quite like yourself, may find myself in the same category of having a little bit of financial stake in that.
And just before we go on to the Jays. And we'll get back into the Masters, obviously, later in the show. We're still going to talk more Masters.
Big John McCarthy joining us.
That Siwoo Kim, Charles Schwartzel handshake on 18 is nightmare fuel. Like, I've watched that, like, too many times where it's like, I cringe every time. And I saw someone tweet, I think it was maybe Noel Hangup. I forget who it was that tweeted. Yeah. It's like, Schwartzel and Siwoo have a secret handshake.
That's exactly what I thought when I saw it. I'm like, how close are these two? President's Cup teammates
bing, 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 bing. Like, yeah, what? So weird, man.
What is going on there? Yeah, it's like, if there would have been a soundtrack, it would have been two dudes like, diddle, diddle, diddle. Like, I don't know what was going on with that handshake. Siwoo, As rough a day as you could possibly have, finding yourself three shots off the lead at the Masters. Terrible handshake, snapping a putter, putting with the three wood, and you're right in the heart of the mix.
And Dutchie told me, our technical director, Andrew Holland, when I was producing Golf Show, he told me about it. He's like, that's all Schwartzel's fault. It's the Corona era. You just fist bump, fist bust, fist. And what are you doing going in there with a handshake? Like, come on, what are we doing here? It's not, what is this, 2019? It's all bump, fist bump, elbow bumps. Like, we're not doing handshakes here. Come on now. So, what do you get it together, Charles?
That's a great point.
Like, why did he have an S on that, by the way, Charles? Anyways, continue.
We had the Aussie on Golf Show, Ben Everill. Next up, South African. And I have one question. Do you not make Charles's down there? Is it only Charles?
Charles.
All right. Obviously, a lot to get into with golf. And as you mentioned, we will dive back into it. Let's be honest, probably a couple more times in the show, but definitely at 11 o'clock when our buddy John McCarthy, national golf writer for the Toronto Sun, joins us. A lot to talk about with this Blue Jays team. Expectations, boy, they're high. It certainly looks like the team is feeling it. I'm thinking of one guy in particular in Bo Bichette. McKee, you're as locked into this team as anybody else. Where are you at on the Jays' kind of rocky start here?
Okay, so you say I'm locked in. Yeah, I was locked in on the couch trying to keep my eyes open last night. Oh my Lord. But it's just, I hate to do it, but it's just the expectation thing is just so scary, right? And it makes you feel like 2013. It just makes you feel like 2013. Those are the thoughts that go through your head. You know, you have all these incredible players and like, we're on game eight. Okay. This is a good way to put it. Okay. I was so excited about this team's outfield depth heading into the year. It's like, oh wow. They signed George Springer, center fielder, top of the lineup, everyday player. You got Teoscar Hernandez, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Randall Grichuk coming off the bench. And I'm sitting there last night. I got Kevin Biggio in left, Jonathan Davis in center, and Josh Palacio. Like, what happened?
You're okay with eight. Maybe. You're okay with maybe one of those
it's
things.
It's game eight, Gunner. Why did this happen? It's like Teo's out because of COVID stuff. Gurriel's leaving because he can't feel his arm because of the vaccine. Like, what's happening? Like, I couldn't believe it. It just feels like it's going so south so quickly. And I guess what? They're only a game. Is it one game or two games under 500 now? So it's not like it's not the end of the world. I know it's so early, but man, oh man, these warning signs are shooting off early. Bo is looking awful at the plate. He's taking his defense to the dish. You can see it. He's, you know, that he had that brutal error, that textbook to get out of the inning. So it would have been only 1-0. They can make it 4-0. Shohei Ohtani hits the bases clearing double. He does another bobble. His defense has been brutal to start the year. And like I said to you just before, he's taken it to the plate and you can see it. He's snapping in the dugout. And you said the expectations, that's what it is. It's just, it looks like a team that thinks they're supposed to be really good and they're just scuffling. And it's hard to watch, Gunner, because guess what? You know who's part of those expectations? Your boy. I was excited about it. I was always nervous about the pitching and, you know, at least this offense is going to mash and now they're not. So baseball is the most predictable thing in the world. We talked about all spring about how this team can't pitch and all it can do is hit. And now they can't hit and all they can do is pitch. It's just a stupid, stupid sport that we spend all this time trying to break down and it makes no sense. So I'm worried. I'm not hitting any panic buttons. I know, as our boy Mike Wilner would say, it's extremely early. It's early, but I am a little worried, Gunner. How are you feeling?
I think that you have to you should be tipping your toe in the water of worried. You don't need to jump in. It's not time to cannonball in the worry waters, but you should definitely be kind of creeping towards there. If you want to, you know, you think about all the things that were going well to start the year. Vlad Jr. looks and still looks like he's going to be a complete force this
encouraging.
Year.
Encouraging. He looks sick.
And, hey, Simeon, he looks great too. He's provided some pop early on as well. That's what you like. But when you start to look around the other things, it's, oh, man, and the Bichette thing is really worrying. And this is what I – look, the manager is not going to be what is the be-all and end-all with this team, but this was always going to be the challenge for Montoyo. Everything was gravy last year. Everything was gravy. Oh, man, this team's winning. It's great. That team is clearly going through it right now. And, again, that's not to say that this is the, oh, well, years over, eight games in or whatever we are. But this is clearly a team that kind of needs a reset. And, hey, maybe they get it this afternoon. They go put up a bunch of crooked numbers and everybody's laughing and feeling good. It really is that easy to kind of have one or two games that get you back to feeling that way. But with a team that's this young and where you don't have those kind of veteran, like George Springer, he's there, okay, but he's not playing. No. He can't put his arm around Bo and say, buddy, I've been he doesn't want to hear it until Springer's in the lineup. Yeah. Like, it's all like this is the old Mike Babcockism. It's like, get out of here. If you're not playing, get out of here. We got the team to worry about. And Springer's supposed to be the kind of galvanizing force. And yeah, he's supposed to do that with his play, but he also can't be that veteran leader the same way he could if he was in the lineup. So I think that you don't need to worry, but this thing can spiral really, really quickly. And the fact that you're getting pitching, you're not going to get it all year. No. Like, you're just not. So to not take advantage of that is really, really discouraging too.
Yeah. And like, the pitching stuff, like, we're doing the openers already. And it's like, Phelps was good in the first inning, I know. And then it's like TJ Zoik, who can't strike anyone out, all contact. Like, I don't know. I had my worries about the pitching from the start. Like, where's Pearson? Have we heard about Pearson? I feel like Pearson's the Freddie Anderson of the league.
A lot of giggling in the dugout last night. Yeah. None of that.
But, like, is he pitching? Is he throwing off a mound yet? Like, where's Robbie Ray? Like, it just, Springer's hurting himself during rehab. Like, it just has some awful, awful mojo going to it. The nice thing about baseball, it's every day you can kind of figure yourself out here. But, like, the warning signs are there early. And Ryu, they can't start Ryu every night. It just seems like there's real issues outside of him and the pitching staff. We'll see. And, you know, I I've been saying, it is early, but, man, there's some serious warning signs for the Blue Jays.
You mentioned Bichette taking his defense to the plate. Is there even a conversation there?
Well, look, I remember the conversations very well during the offseason. It was like, oh, you can't. How could you acquire Francisco Lindor and bump your franchise shortstop off of shortstop? Yeah, you probably could have done that. Four-time gold glover, picks it nasty, hits it good. Like, probably would have been okay. And how long, you got a guy who's pretty good at shortstop literally standing there at second base. Like,
literally right next to him.
Watching him do bad things every game. So, I don't know. It's kind of a crappy situation here, because what are you going to do, move Bo to second? Like, that's not where he plays either. So it's like, you've kind of created this weird sort of dynamic where you don't have anywhere to put Bo. You got to keep Semi in, I guess, at second, play him at third. Like, it's a weird dynamic that they've kind of created here. I think potentially if this goes on any longer, Bo starts scuffling a bit more, they will put Semien in there for a game or two. Maybe DH Bo, let him get off his feet and kind of stop thinking about what he's doing in the outfield when he comes to the plate.
Yeah, his bat's just too important. Like, it's not as important as it was last year because of the emergence of Teo and Springer's here now, and Vlad is Vlad. And yes, it's not as important. They still need that guy to be a force in their lineup. And if it means making him not think about his defense, the problem is it's a very delicate dance, right? This isn't moving a guy off first base or something. Like, this is the premier defensive position in the sport.
And just quickly, before we go talk about the Leafs, which I'm very excited to do with our boy Luke Fox, I watch Kevin Biggio, and I know Kevin Biggio is supposed to have this sort of pedigree as like a top of the lineup guy, great eye. He's having a terrible start to the year, and Charlie just keeps pumping him out in the second spot in the lineup. And it's hard to, it's a hard balance between, hey, it's really early in the year and you want to have some sort of consistency where you keep a guy in there. You don't want to pull him out as early into the year, but he's also killing you in big spots. Right. It's like he's coming up in big spots. It seems like Rowdy or him or Jansen has come up in every big spot so far this year. So I wonder how long they stick with Cavan in the two hole and you don't just get Vladdy. Get your best hitter hitting in the first inning. I really, really want that. They had it last night, obviously, because of all the stuff that happened with the lineup. But I'd like to see that consistently happen. Have him hitting in the two or three hole every day for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it almost feels like they're just kind of waiting for Springer to get healthy, and then it'll reset, but that can keeps getting kicked further and further down the road. Because if it was going to be a week and a half, it does feel like it's like, all right, let's leave Cavan up there, kind of similar to what it was last year, and then we'll reset once you get the lineup is full. But it seems like every day the lineup gets less and less full. This has got to be a record for us. 23 minutes into a show and nary a Leafs mention. Wow.
Lots of stuff going on. Remember the
Look
days?
At what the Masters
Buddy,
and Jays can do.
Just, okay, quickly before we go, just think about a year ago today. What we would have been talking about on the radio.
Rudy Gobert? Yeah, what's the right punishment?
Honestly, like, how far we've come in a year where we get to talk about so many sports. What a weekend. We're not even going to mention the Raptors. Sorry, Raptors fans. You're not even going to get a mention on the show today. There's just so much to talk about. So I love it.
Yeah, you want to talk about walking wounded. Raptors, indeed. Luke Fox, Jukebox, our buddy. Love his Leaf stuff. Always got great mailbags on the weekend. Always great with you guys on a postgame show for Leaf Station as well. He's going to join us next here on Sportsnet Today.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. Very, very happy to be joined by our next guest. One of my favorites. Always, anything he writes, must read for me. And let's be honest, it's because he's writing a ton about the Leafs, and I need as much Leafs content as I could possibly get my hands, eyes, and ears on. Luke Fox, Jukebox on Twitter, sportsnet.ca. Luke, how are you doing this morning?
Well, a lot better after that intro, Brent. That was pretty nice.
Sparkling.
Pump those tires. I know what to do. I want this thing rolling nice and smoothly, so I want you in a good mood. You know, if I was Sam, I would probably ask you a music question to really ease you in, to get you in your comfort zone. But I'll be honest, I'm not that cool, so I'm just going to ask you about the Leafs. They made a trade yesterday. It feels like this is a player who could potentially be useful come playoff time, maybe factor into that fourth line, likely. But does this mean anything in terms of LTIR? There's been a lot of math floating around with caps and trying to do gymnastics, and Brendan Pridham is very important. Does this deal mean anything in terms of what the Leafs can do ahead of the deadline?
Well, it does if Freddie goes on LTIR and never comes back until the playoffs, but that's a big, huge question mark. And what's interesting to me is how, like I described it in one article, is purposely vague. The Leafs have been pretty forthcoming on injury news. You know, they were giving us pretty detailed reports on how Austin Matthews' wrist was doing and what caused it and how it could heal. But anytime you ask about Freddie Anderson, the answers are all very short and vague. So Keefe says there's no concern that Anderson will be back this season, but we don't know if that means the regular season or the playoffs. And so to go and acquire an injured player in Riley Nash, who's out 4 to 6 weeks, he won't even be back for the regular season. You don't even know what round of the playoffs this guy might be back. And he'll go on long-term injured reserve. So the way LTIR works is kind of if you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound. So if they do move Freddie to LTIR for the rest of the season, then they suddenly have even more cap space to acquire a significant player or players before Monday at 3 p.m. So I think it's going to be really fascinating what Dubas' next move is. Nash, you know, he's a decent player. He's not going to score you any goals, but he's a fourth line center, a checker. The puck doesn't usually go in your net when he's on the ice. He's a Columbus Blue Jackets type of player, but he's more of a depth option. And I think this is more of a Brandon Pridham move, and we'll have to see. Because the thing with Anderson is, maybe it's the best thing for the cap if he doesn't come back into the playoffs, but is that the best thing for the Leafs goaltending situation? Like, Freddie usually needs a little time to warm up, and it's been 22 days and counting since he's been off the ice already.
Yeah, and that was exactly what I was going to ask you, Luke. Like, sure, great, you can give yourself a little bit more cap room, but you know what's pretty important? Having two good goalies heading into the playoffs. You know, we see this every year where the guys, you know, with the Braden Holtby thing with Grubauer, like it's happened with Matt Murray. Like, you need two good goalies here. And the slow starter thing, like, this is definitely a pretty scary situation for the Leafs.
Yeah, so, like, just take last year in the playoffs. Like, I look at Vasilevskiy as kind of an anomaly, the fact that he played every game for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Frederick Anderson, Jack Campbell, they aren't Vasilevskiy. Like, those guys, there may be one or two of them. Like, maybe Hellebuck could go on a run like that. But generally, you need two goalies, especially it's going to be every other night, you know, and the way Jack Campbell's been going, sometimes he has to skip practice. Sometimes he's a game-time decision because he's kind of dealing with a left leg ailment of some sort of his own. So I'm with you, Sam. You need two healthy goalies. So it makes me wonder, you know, are they being extra careful making sure Freddie's healthy and he's healthier than we think, or is his health really in doubt? And if so, then maybe they go out and get a goalie. I mean, it's kind of a buyer's market, I would say, heading into this deadline. There are pl- plenty of, you know, serviceable type goalies. I don't know if any of them are upgrades over a healthy Anderson, but there are kind of depth goalie options that will be out there.
Yeah.
Let's say.
Oh, sorry, Gunner.
Yeah. Let's just say hypothetically, and I know this is a hypothetical to literally before the season even started, but let's say it is a guy like Aaron Dell who they were able to kind of sneak through waivers, or he was still in the mix and it wasn't Hutch. Do you think that would have changed at all? Like, is this more about Michael Hutchinson can't be the number two guy, or you're not quite ready, despite everything you've seen, to just say, okay, Jack Campbell can far and away run with this? Like, do you understand what I'm saying there?
I think so. I mean, I think they're ready to, I think they have confidence in Campbell. I mean, he's won every game he's played. Yeah. He's set a record, like 10 in a row. I think they're comfortable with him even starting the playoffs. It's just, you know, the organization has its sights on four rounds. And just generally, you run into, you want some security. I think you look at what happened in the Colorado Avalanche. They ended up on their third string goalie, which ironically was Michael Hutchinson. And some would argue that that cost them the series against Dallas, right? Like, they came so close, game seven, and they're on their third string goalie. And, you know, all respect to Hutch. Like, his numbers have actually been fine. And he's come up, I think, with four wins so far. Like, that, like, he's far exceeded expectations. But I just don't think you want to, you know, bet a Stanley Cup run on a tandem of Campbell and Hutchinson. You either want a healthy Anderson, and maybe if they feel more secure than we know, or you want to go get some support.
Yeah, and you know, before I want to move on from goaltending here, but there is a guy that plays pretty well against the Leafs, plays for the Calgary Flames. David Riddick's a free agent next year, and you don't have to do the quarantine thing with him. I don't think he's obviously better than. He's not a great goaltender by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a good sort of depth option, probably a little bit better than Michael Hutchinson at this point. But like you said, Hutch for a fourth string goalie, there's not a lot more you can ask for, really. Like, I mean, what do you expect? It's not like you're going to have a world beater coming in that position. So I think there's some options for them, but I definitely think they should look to do it. I want to switch gears here, and I want to talk about Alex Galchenyuk. And Luke, is there a more ideal situation for a pending UFA to step into here than just what the Leafs have done with him in terms of usage? Like, they're playing him with Tavares and Nylander, and tonight he's going to get a look on the top line. Like, he has to be absolutely thrilled with the way the Leafs are using him. It's been amazing for him, and he's going to probably get a nice contract out of it because he's going to produce with these guys.
You would like to think so, and the fact that it's against the Ottawa Senators too, right? The team that cut him, you know, that took a chance on him in the offseason, but didn't treat him anywhere near the way the Leafs are treating him. Like, he had never played an AHL game until he got with the Toronto organization. So they were like, let's put him with the Marlies. Let's give him, you know, top-line minutes with the Marlies. Let him pile up some points. Let him start feeling good about his game and good about his confidence so that when we do call him up, you know, he comes up with a little bit of swagger and feeling like, okay, I got my game back. And then you don't start him in the bottom six. You give him a really prime spot with Tavares and Nylander. And, I mean, basically they gave him the same opportunity they gave Jimmy Vesey. And Jimmy Vesey, you know, he dropped the ball. He was put in a position to succeed, and then he kind of found his way down the lineup and eventually out of it. Whereas Galchenyuk is playing like his career's on the line, which it may be. Like, if he doesn't show well with the seventh franchise, he might be KHL bound. So, you know, he has lots to play for. And I think the fact that, you know, he's also in a playoff race, and now, like you said, he's on the top line. This is a really plum opportunity for him. And, you know, it has some people thinking, hey, do we even need Kyle Dubas to go out and get another winger? But when you see Nylander go out for a COVID protocol and the next man up is Barabanov, then you're like, okay.
Yeah.
maybe we do need some depth here, even though as fine as Galchenyuk has shown. And I just really like it. Yes, he has some skill, but I just love how he's in on the forecheck. Like, he seems to be working really hard. Like, he's impressed me. My expectations were not that high for this guy coming in.
every conversation I've had with somebody about Galchenyuk starts with exactly that thing. It's like, oh yeah, you figured there'd be some skills, some dash. You figure you would see that. But the fact that he has just worked since he's gotten the lineup, and I don't disagree with the fact that the Leafs have put him in a great spot, but it's also kind of an impossible spot. It's like, just go replace Zach Hyman on the top line and just be exactly what he's been. But, you know, that's kind of exactly the mold that I think any player would want to take when you're playing with guys like Marner and Matthews. You know, when it comes to the deadline, I feel like people have really vacillated the need for a top six. We just talked about it without Nylander. It does kind of almost feel like, look, you'd rather have him in the lineup than not, but it does feel like a blessing in disguise that it allows you to kind of see, what would happen if one of these guys went down? And for me, it has kind of created some impetus to, maybe it doesn't need to be Taylor Hall, but you'd like somebody to kind of add to that top nine, I would think now.
Oh, absolutely. I would say top seven, you know, like if it's not second line left winger, it's third line center. You know, a couple guys I really like, and we're not even 100% sure they're going to be available, are Nick Foligno and Scott Laughton. Now, Foligno, you know, has Ontario connections. I think the Leafs would be one team that maybe he would be willing to leave Columbus for, but he is, you know, he's as true to the Blue Jackets as you can get. Like, him and Torts are tight. He loves that community. He's got a family there. But I feel like because he does come back to Ontario in the summers, because this is such a golden opportunity, maybe he'd be willing to leave. But I think that would have to be a conversation where the organization is comfortable letting him go. I think he'd be an ideal target. And Laughton, I think Philly wants to get him re-signed, but he's a pending UFA. And if you're Chuck Fletcher and you get the sense that you're not able to re-sign him, you might as well put him out there on the market, because centers are hard to come by. The Leafs would be interested. I'm sure Pittsburgh would be interested, but Philly probably doesn't want to trade with Pittsburgh. And he's also a local guy. He's from Oakville originally. I think he's the type of solid two-way player that they need. Both those guys are elite penalty killers as well, and I think that's an area that the Leafs could take a step in terms of improving on. Because right now they have Jason Spezza taking draws on the PK, and then he rushes off to get off the ice so they get a winger on. But if you had a pure centerman that also loves blocking shots, like Foligno, like Scott Laughton, then that kind of, you know, solves one of your issues. So I kind of like that type of forward for them to chase.
A captain who doesn't feel comfortable leaving the team he spent the bulk of his career with to be a rental at the deadline. Where have I heard that before? I heard that before? Maybe this works out better for the Leafs this time. Luke, thanks so much for the time. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right. Enjoy your Saturday, fellas.
Thanks, Luke.
There he goes. Luke Fox. Hope he enjoys it as well. Obviously, Leafs in action tonight against the Senators. Alex Galchenyuk up on that top line. Trade talk in the air. So, lots to get into with the Leafs. Where you want to start?
I got to say, you know, I was a little... it's Masters. The Jays are on. I had a little bit of Leafs fatigue heading into tonight. You know, they've been playing all these sort of somewhat important games against other big teams. I guess the Flames aren't necessarily that. But, you know, they've been playing against the Habs on Wednesday night. It was a good game. They beat the Habs. I loved watching that game. And then it's like, oh, man. Saturday against the Sens. And, you know, they're always plucky. I understand that. But, like, it's a complete...
Like, you know, Tkachuk's going to be running around. Stutzla's going to do something.
But it's a mostly meaningless game, correct?
Yep.
But now, you get to see old Galchenyuk up there on that top. I'm interested in that. And I'm hoping it's probably going to be a Hutchinson start tonight, right? We can all agree on that. I'm really sort of interested to see what Galchenyuk can do in that top line. And I, like Luke said there, I've been blown away by this guy. Like, the first game, everyone's like, I thought he had a good game. And I said, well, I think you just wanted to see that. But now I think it's pretty undeniable that he's playing well. And, you know, the thing that has surprised me is, you know, I was expecting him to be kind of the guy that every beer league team has, a guy that has all the skill in the world, but doesn't necessarily try that hard, and everyone kind of resents him for it because they're like, oh, he's got so much skill, but he doesn't give the effort. And that's kind of what I was expecting with Alex Galchenyuk. But man, oh man, his forechecking, his battles along the boards, and his sort of, you know, desire to chase down pucks has been really, really pleasantly surprising for me. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do in that top line. I hate that they have to switch up, take Hyman off that line, because that line has just been so good. But I'm interested to see if you're ever going to try it out against the Sens. And you know what? One time, just give me Marner and Tavares. I want to see that too, because we all know it works, and we know eventually it's the stupidest thing to talk about.
No, I'm rolling my eyes because Sheldon Keefe, and I love this trait, especially coming off the back of Mike Babcock, has tried literally everything with this team. There has been nothing outside of like mixing the D pairs, because they have been perfect the second they got put together. Yep. Up front, though, it has been Blender City except for that.
Yeah.
That is the one thing that shall never be touched. And it's really odd for a guy who is so open to experimentation and wants to see and try different things, that no matter what, thou shall not mix the wingers. Like, it's really, especially when you take Nylander out of the lineup, it almost, in my eyes, gives you impetus to do it. Now, I guess the thinking is, it does feel like most of these coaches like to have like their set top pairs, right? And they don't want to switch that, but they've tried everything else. Why not that one time? Why not?
Because here's the thing, Gunner. Austin Matthews and Marner are dynamic. And it's so stupid to complain about it, because, you know, this is the definition of hockey fan first world problems, because the Leafs have the best record in the NHL, right? Aren't they the top team still? They were the last time I looked at the standings. I don't look at the standings that often because I don't really need to worry about them as a Leafs watcher, but
not to brag,
but I would just love for an extended run of Willie, Matthews, Marner, Tavares. I really would. And it's so stupid because the Leafs literally have the best line in the league when Matthews, Marner, and Hyman are going, right? They are. Yep. There's no one better than
that's
them.
The new perfection line.
And it really is. So anyways, it's just a stupid little thing, but all Leaf fans know. Everyone knows, right? Like, anyone you talk to, they know that Marner is probably better with Tavares. Not necessarily better, but if you want to have a better team, that's true. That's true. So there you go. We found a way to complain about the Lions on a team that's running away with the President's Trophy at the moment.
So I have one more thought on Lions. We'll do that after the break. But if I told you that, like, let's just say you hopped in from the moment Alex Galchenyuk was traded to today, and it's like, hey, man, Galchenyuk's been great as a Leaf. Everyone universally singing his praises. Would you think he has more than 5 points in 18 games?
Yes.
Because that's the shocking part about it. You would figure, oh, man, there's some annoying habits, but he's already popped like six.
It's the opposite.
It's the exact opposite, and that's why it's so
It's important. Hyman-esque.
Here's the thing. The offense for a guy like that, and it doesn't need to come in spades, but it's going to come.
Yeah.
It is going to come. All right. I have another question about the Leafs lines. I'll ask you.
We got some good texts, too.
Yeah, we do. Text lines popping. 590-590. Please include your name and location. Going to dive back into the Blue Jays after 10. Dive back into the Masters after 11. Our buddy JD Bunkus also join us. Woo! Firecracker of a show. More Leafs coming up next on Sportsnet today.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Gotta love them. Sportsnet today, Brant Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. And I talk about this all the time. Anybody who's a sports fan, they just have such a direct line to keep in touch with their friends at all point in time. Like, if you are also a fan of the Leafs, so is your bud, there's very rarely the like, oh man, we just haven't talked in forever. It's like, you're sending some texts during these games. You get the thoughts. And a buddy of mine's been giving me a thought. And I don't like it. But I'm curious, so I wanted to bring it to this forum. We have talked a lot about flipping the wingers, flipping Nylander up with the Matthews, and flipping Marner with Tavares. What are our thoughts of really spreading things out and having a Tavares basically centering what was the Engvall line, and then having William Nylander on more of a scoring-based third line? Where are you at on really kind of spreading? Now, you can make the argument of Nylander's not consistent offense, so that's not really spreading the offense around. Where are you at on that?
No, thanks. Don't like that very much at all. No. I really like the Willie-Tavares pairing. I do. You know, and I think there's nights where it's quiet, but I think they have more good nights than they have bad nights, and I think they're a perfect complementary line to Matthews and Marner, and that's why they don't switch it up. I just quickly wanted to say, I got fact-checked on Twitter, and I wanted to mention it. The Leafs are not running away with the President's Trophy. They are, in fact, behind the Colorado Avalanche, who are at 58 points, and the Leafs are at 57. So just a little fact check for your boy who got a little too fired up there talking about the Leafs.
You know what trophy that doesn't exist that they are 1,000% in line
for?
Oh,
yeah.
The Canadian Chalice.
Oh, yeah. They are definitely winning that. But, yeah, so I feel like a lot of teams sort of chase this spreading around the offense thing. And it's like, why? Just, that's why you kind of have this depth. And if they make a big trade for a guy like Foligno or a guy like Scott Laughton, like those guys are mentioning, then you can kind of have them be the anchor on your third line. And then your offense is really spread out. So even if they do make a trade for one of those guys, I don't think they'll necessarily trade. I don't think it's going to be, oh man, I'm hoping it's not Hall. I know Hall's a good player. I know all the reasons that they should trade for Hall, but I don't want to have Hall on the Leafs. It just feels like it's a bad thing.
Okay, confession time.
You want it.
I planned this for later in the show, but I'm coming around. It's starting to come around. It looked a little thin. I'm not bet. Now, here's the thing. What I am doing is getting out ahead of this. I am not sitting here banging the table saying, go get Taylor Hall. I am not there yet. I don't know that I'll be there come Monday either. But I'm starting to warm to the idea that if Foligno is unwilling to leave and you look at the other options, do I want Taylor Hall instead of Scott Laughton? Do I want Taylor Hall instead of Scott Laughton and a depth D and maybe a third goalie to be behind Freddie and Campbell? I think I might. I'm starting to come around to it. He's shooting 2% on the year.
And
I know he has
2%
goals
in Toronto too.
Okay, so this is where you're a big narrative guy. Oh, true or false?
Massive narrative guy. Love narratives. I eat them up.
So don't get me wrong. I can easily picture the narrative of the Leafs were going and it was an amazing season and then they traded for the cursed Taylor Hall and it was the kiss of death and everything went wrong. I live in that world very easily.
And everyone in Toronto, he will be the most hated man in Toronto.
10 billion percent. Like I can easily get there.
Mm.
But I can also see a world. Just picture the lovely video essay done by Stephen Brunt as the cup is going down Yonge Street. What this embattled franchise needed to do was not run away from the bad juju, but embrace it. And they chose to go and get the worst of all, Taylor Hall. And what did he do? He put the team on his back. And he didn't win the Conn Smythe because he was like fourth on the team in scoring, but he had a tremendous playoff run. Taylor Hall enters the free agency back as winner guy. I can kind of talk myself into seeing that. I really can. Like, as much as the bad is there, and it is programmed into our brain, that's where we immediately jump to. It could happen the other way. I can see the narrative right now building around me, getting a little bit of goosebumps. I don't know if we'll even be able to have a parade in my image that I was laying out there. But I can see it happening, and I got to be honest, McKee, starting to warm to it a little bit. I know I'm not going to sell you on this. I know who I'm talking to. Am I starting to just like pull you a little? You're saying, hold on. This Brent guy's saying something. And
no,
I want to hear it.
No. But here's the thing. I'm a Dumbo sports fan. So the second he pots one, I'm like, oh, I was always in on Taylor Hall. I never had a bad thought about this. Like, look, I screamed at Rob Wong about how Freddie Anderson was the best goalie in the Leafs. I've screamed at some people about some stupid stuff. So I'd be down to scream at you about this. Look, did you see the Galaxy Brain thought I was floating around on Twitter there the other day that, you know, how he sat out Taylor Hall, that Terrell Hall's, he's already in quarantine in Toronto. They're being completely quiet about it. They're just putting him in quarantine. He's sitting out and they're waiting for him to, and then they're going to make the trade. Love that thought, but I don't think that's going to happen, but I think that's got to be over some CBA. That's probably not going to be allowed.
But
if there was one loophole though, our boy Pridham would find it. Like every day on Twitter with the PR, it's like some guy you've never heard of has been unplaced on the taxi squad. It's like, what are you doing, dude? What are you doing?
Something called Dusik
I consume Leafs content literally all day, every day, and I've never heard of that guy, and he's on the taxi squad. I'm like, yeah, that is some cap chicanery, Mr. Pridham. There's no doubt about it.
But great for that guy, because I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know the exact numbers, but there's a massive difference for being on the Marlies for
1,000%.
A day and being on the Leafs, and that guy probably just like bought a nice car.
So let's just put a little bow on the Hall conversation, because it's obviously going to be a hot one coming into the trade deadline here in a couple days. I don't, right now, sitting here, don't want it. And, I think the Leafs are good enough without Taylor Hall, and it's not This is not, none of this is based in fact, Gunner. None of this is based in any sort of logic. Because
facts,
I think,
who needs them?
I think Taylor Hall is a good hockey player, and I think Taylor Hall could be really good on the Leafs. But it just feels weird. Every team he goes to is bad. Like, it just feels like there's this weird sort of, you know, aura surrounding him. But if the Toronto Maple Leafs make a trade and Taylor Hall is on the team on April 13th, I'll be a little bit excited. So there you go. I can't lie to myself. I can't sit here and say Taylor Hall's on the Leaf. I'm never going to poo-poo on that. But it's not something that I necessarily want. And I would much prefer Nick Foligno over Taylor Hall.
Foligno is the guy I want. I'm not veering from that at all. That's the guy I want. And I think if they get Hall, it ends up being Foligno wouldn't waive. Maybe Lawton just isn't an option. And then they get Taylor Hall for, you know, something approaching dirt cheap at the very end of deadline. Because here's the thing. If they make the Taylor Hall trade, they're not doing it until Monday, because every day you're on the team, it counts for cap. And again, I don't do math. I willingly run away from it at all times. But they tell me the longer you're on the team, the more it counts to the cap. So if Taylor Hall is a Leaf, it's going to come down at 2:59 or 3:59, whatever time the deadline is on Monday. And you should be watching coverage on
there's so much coverage.
Sportsnet now. You should be listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Well, you have, where we will have you covered as well. Yeah, a lot going on. There's going to be a ton of coverage, and I think that's it. It's the if Taylor Hall's a Leaf, it's because he's sitting out there, and they can get him for kind of nothing at the deadline with like double retention and lots of cap gymnastics going on. I can't wait to see it. Who knows? Maybe we get a Leafs trade before the show's done today. Not feeling like it, to be perfectly honest, but we can always hope. Well, I would love that. And I'm the Pied Piper of big news. I was on for Gobert. I was on for Springer. Maybe I'll be on for Foligno. I was not on for Riley Nash. What we have on next, though, Laura Armstrong talking some Blue Jays. Love doing that. Lots to dive into with the team. Where's she at on the idea of maybe moving Bo, giving him a couple days off at DH? That's where we'll start with Laura when we continue on Sportsnet today.
First to the party and last to leave. What do you say we party together? This is Sportsnet Today, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. We'll be here with you until noon. Busy day. Lots going on. Obviously, Jays will be on the station a little later on today. Continuing their series against the Angels. First home series of the year down in Dunedin. They have that crazy extra inning game going to 11. The whole starting extras with a runner on second. I love it, but it's still super weird every time I see it. I know. You're a purist at heart, Sam, so it's hard for you to, fully embrace
it. It's the Major League of Baseball. Like, I know. Guess what? It sucks that it takes a really long time sometimes, but it's the Major Leagues. It's not the Pan Am Games. Good Lord. Anyways.
Hope you feel the same way about 3-on-3 in the NHL. All right, joining us now to discuss baseball and what's going on with the Blue Jays. Not the start they would have hoped. Always love having her join us. Laura Armstrong, Blue Jays beat writer for the Toronto Star. Laura, how are you doing today?
Hi, guys. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure.
Always love having you on. There's a lot to talk about with this team, but I kind of want to start with Bo Bichette. He's been scuffling, not the start to the year he wanted. You can see the frustration is kind of wearing on him in the dugout. I don't think we're anywhere near having this conversation quite yet, but he's also had the struggles in the field. Do you think there's a world where they just look at the guy standing literally right beside him and say, maybe that's a better option at short?
It's such an interesting conversation, right? Because I don't necessarily think that that is the right move. Like, I think the Jays have specifically said to Bo Bichette, you are our starting shortstop. And I think that he really sort of took that to heart when they didn't sign a shortstop in the offseason. And that's a point of pride for him, right? So if you take that point of pride away from Bo Bichette, is that going to affect his confidence even more? I mean, you can certainly see him in the dugout. He seems to be frustrated. He came into this season sort of maybe a little bit unexpectedly sort of down, in the sense that he didn't like the way that he finished 2020. And we're all sitting there going, well, we thought it was pretty good. But he was not impressed. He wanted to do better. So the fact that he's gotten off to this slow start to the season, I don't know if taking him out of a position that he really prides himself on being able to man is the best move. That being said, the counter argument there is that, You know, we've looked at, for example, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and his struggles in the field over recent years. And I think that you can see that those struggles wore on Vlad. So, you know, now that he's away from third base, he seems to be, you know, a little bit more comfortable in the field, which gives him more time to focus just on his hitting, which is fantastic for the Blue Jays. So would that benefit Bo Bichette as well? I think, you know, as you said, it's too early, and it's not too early because, I mean, once you have you start seeing these errors happen on a regular basis, you this conversation is sort of inevitable. But I think that the Jays really have to manage the balance properly. And maybe the answer isn't necessarily taking him away from shortstop. Maybe it's a day out of the field, a rest day, you know, put Joe Panic in there or something, switch up your infield a little bit. You're so big on versatility, and give Bo Bichette a couple of days off just to focus on his hitting. But it's a really tricky one because I think that he is a player who certainly prides himself on, you know, his defense and being that shortstop for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and the part of it that's really tough, Laura, is you can see, and Gunnar and I were talking about this earlier in the show, is you can see the expectations on these young players and what the sort of, you know, lead into this season has done to them early, because they're really, really pressing. And Bo's taking his struggles at short up to the dish. You know, Marcus Semien has got off to a nice start with the power, but, you know, he's not getting on base as much. You can kind of see the expectations weighing on these guys early in this season, no?
Oh, absolutely. I think that it was pretty apparent to me in that game on Thursday night, that 11-inning game. There were, you could see Bo Bichette walking like up and down the dugout at one point because he knew that he missed a great pitch to hit, and he looked like he wanted to punch something. Like, frankly, that's what I was surprised that he was able to rein it in. And then you saw Kevin Biggio at one point, like, sort of kneeling at the top step of the dugout, and he looked a little almost despondent, and you're thinking, like, it's too early for this, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest. But, like, I think the thing is that these guys, not only are the outside expectations huge on them, but when they say that they want to win a World Series championship and when they say they expect to be in that conversation this year, they genuinely believe it. So it's not, I don't necessarily know if it's outside expectations so much as it's personal expectation. I feel like they're almost like letting themselves down early on, and they think, you know, if you're going to lose this many games early in the season, when we're sort of a playoff contender, what is that going to mean at the end of the year? Are we going to rue these four games that we lost to the Angels in April?
Yeah, I know. Sorry, excuse me. So I just wanted to ask you about Kevin Biggio. And this is a sort of similar conversation to the one Gunnar and you were having, talking about, is it too early to sort of, you know, move Bo off short? Is it too early to start thinking about moving Kevin out of the two hole? Because he's obviously scuffling big time to start the year. I think he's obviously a better hitter than what he is right now. But I think, you know, the pressure of the two hole, you know, you're supposed to get on base. You're supposed to sort of be a certain type of hitter in there. And he's just not that. But do you want to keep riding it, or do you want to put him lower in the lineup and let him figure it out? It's kind of a tough balance, similar to Bo at short.
It's definitely a tough balance. I might actually go the opposite direction and put him back in the leadoff spot. Mm. Like, as you said about Marcus Semien, he's got a lot of power, but he's not necessarily getting on base all that much. And I think that Kevin Biggio took a lot of pride in that, like, first that top spot, that leadoff spot in the order. And I think that maybe you put him back there and you give him a shot to do what he did before. I think that might be interesting, particularly with George Springer on the IL, right? If George Springer is not on the IL, this is probably a different conversation. But I think that you might give Kevin Biggio, the poor guy has to deal with so much change. Like, he's constantly being moved around. And it's like the one thing that he could rely on was the leadoff spot. And they take that away from him too. And it's not to say that it's like, for an entire season, and it's probably more rational to move him down the order, but I might put him up there for a couple of games and just see like what he does and see if it sparks something in him. And you know, I wouldn't keep him there for the rest of the season, but what's the harm at this point? Maybe he takes a different approach to the plate. He gets on base a couple of times, even if he's not getting necessarily a ton of hits, but he gets on base a couple of times. And you have a guy like Marcus Semien who's hitting for power right now behind him. I mean, what's the worst that can happen there?
Yeah, it's kind of felt to me like Montoyo is almost being in the mindset of, let's just kind of leave this as is until Springer gets in the lineup, and then we'll really kind of figure out exactly what we want to do. It's kind of felt like just in a bit of a holding pattern. You know, obviously there's a lot of important players on this roster, but the way things have kind of gone early on this season, Steven Matz is quickly climbing that pecking order. He is like the second most important pitcher on the team, almost certainly. And if you want to include the rest of the roster, he's pretty high up there. You know, he had the great outing. It feels to me like, you know, what he is going to kind of be a real kind of tipping point for this rotation. If he can be anything close consistently to what he was in that first outing, well, all of a sudden you've got two strong starters, and that you can build off. But if he's not that guy, it does feel like you're still kind of working with Ryu and stuff. It feels to me like today's start, you know, I know it's one start in a long season, it's only a second of the year, but it feels like it's extremely important to this team.
Oh, I completely agree that it's extremely important to this team. I think that, like, the way that Steven Matz and, to an extent, Robbie Ray as well, even though we're not talking about him yet, but I'm sure we'll be having this conversation about him 2 weeks from now if he has a good first start or a bad first start. How those guys fare is going to be huge to this team. And I think Steven Matz is a very interesting signing. Like, I liked it when they first made it. I like the fact that I think that maybe he, you know, as a New York homegrown sort of player who got, I think, a lot of pressure and expectations at home, I thought that maybe the argument of like a change of scenery might actually make sense in this particular case. And I think that he seemed really excited to work with Pete Walker from day one. He had a lot of information about Pete Walker. He knew a lot about Pete Walker's reputation, and it seemed like they were both very keen to collaborate. So I think that it'll be interesting to sort of see what he does, as you said, in the second start, because he's just a guy we didn't really see much of in spring training. I mean, he was throwing on the backfields a lot, so we didn't get the opportunity to see him. So maybe he's been doing this all spring training, and we were all just surprised because we haven't seen him very much. But it's going to be interesting to see if he can hold it up for sure. I mean, you're not going to get an outing like he had in his first outing every single time, but if you can get something close to that, it's going to be a game changer for these Jays, particularly at the start of the season. I don't think that we think that the Blue Jays bats are going to be this bad all year long. I mean, they're too good of an offensive team for that, but you need to be able to have these pitchers show up in the sort of valleys. That was my big concern about this team going into this 162-game season, is that they're young. They haven't ever navigated a full Major League Baseball season. And it's like, how are they going to deal with the lows, not how are they going to deal with the highs? And I think that this is where the veteran presence is that the Blue Jays have brought in the offseason have to step up.
Okay, so one of those veterans they brought in was George Springer. And, you know, one of the things I was so excited about heading into the season was the Jays outfield. You know, it's like, oh, you got Gurriel, you have Springer, you have Teoscar Hernandez, you have Randall Grichuk coming off the bench. Last night, I'm watching Kevin Biggio, Jonathan Davis, and Josh Palacio in Game 8, Laura. What happened? Like, it just evaporated in front of their eyes. It's crazy how quickly it can happen over a baseball season. I know they'll get back healthy. I know it's a COVID vaccine thing. Like, there's a COVID exposure. Like, they'll be back somewhat soon. But, man, it just happens fast.
It happened real fast. And it's funny because I remember asking Ross Atkins, like, around the time that Josh Palacios was hitting like 600 in spring training, and saying, like, where's the room for Josh Palacios? Like, when's Josh Palacios going to get a chance? Oh, it turns out like 5 days after the season started. So it's, I guess, you know, there's definitely room. But yeah, I mean, I think that the moral of this story is that let's not forget that COVID is still a thing, mm-hmm. Even though we are playing baseball, and we all need to continue to be super careful. I don't think, you know, I mean, the Springer thing is kind of concerning. And I think that, I mean, you don't want to go crazy and say, what a mistake. Obviously it wasn't a mistake. George Springer is a great signing, but it's like, he's 31 years old and these things might happen. Right. And so this is going to be something that the Blue Jays have to navigate, as he, you know, goes through this 6-year deal, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, who's out there today. Or yeah, maybe the lineup's already out. I haven't looked, but
I haven't seen the lineup yet, but no, I just, a quick thing on the COVID thing, you know, it is somewhat exciting to see guys missing games because of COVID vaccine side effects. Like, sure, like, people, you know, it's not, people might take that the wrong way. Like, no vaccine you take is not going to make you feel a little weird for a day or two. Like, that's kind of how it works. So it's nice to see that, because that's exciting. It means they're getting vaccinated, which means we're getting closer eventually.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's very important. And I think, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure that that means it's working.
Yeah.
So like, we'll take it. Right. But it is interesting when you like have these conversations, and there's been a couple of conversations this week where, you know, Bo Bichette said, oh, I had COVID, didn't know. Randall Grichuk said, I had COVID, I was, you know, out on my couch for a week. And then it's like, you think, you know, Lourdes Gurriel and Ryan Brucker are now out because of the vaccine. Teoscar Hernandez is out because he came into contact. Like, it's still something that exists. And I mean, the vaccine element of it is so fantastic, but like, it's something that Major League Baseball can't pretend is not there, because if you're naive to it, it's still going to sort of ravage, ravage it, particularly until everybody's vaccinated and everybody has, you know, that 2 week period after their vaccination or whatever the case, or second doses, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, it is interesting. Even
science,
the kind of
guys,
rules.
It's hard.
Oh yeah.
Hey, look, I can't even, I just did a full hour on how I can't do math. So biology thrown in there, I feel like you have to probably do math to make vaccines too. So science and math combined, not a chance for me. So you said you're not a doctor, but what do you know about
I'm
Nate
not.
Pearson? Feels like this guy's pretty important. I saw lots of shots of him smiling in the dugout. He was laughing. He had the mask on, so I'm assuming he was smiling, feel like he was in good spirits. When do we think we might see him? Because, you know, we just talked a lot about how important Steven Matz is, and maybe Nate Pearson could make Steven Matz just a little bit less important if we get to see him sometime soon.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I heard Buck Martinez say on the broadcast that he's still a ways away, and Buck Martinez is in Florida, so I trust what Buck's saying. I mean, he's not facing live hitters yet, right? So I think that there's still a ways to go. He's throwing, but I think we all get excited when somebody's like throwing again or whatever the case may be, and then suddenly you realize there's still like 17 more steps. Somebody should at some point like write out the steps so that we all remember, like, okay, we're only on step 3. There's 25 steps.
Step
like, don't get
step.
Too excited.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, I think that like the Pearson thing, it's not the worst thing in the world. Like the Jays, I mean, it's not great. Obviously you don't want to see your top pitching prospect hurt again. But the Pearson thing is like not the worst thing in the world, in the sense that I think that they're going to have to find a creative way to use him anyways. And they're still going to, if he comes back at some sort of reasonable time. But I think that like they might be able to use him more consistently and more normally if he misses a little bit of time at the start of the season. I mean, it's not ideal, but it's definitely a guy that, like, if he comes back, I don't know what time, end of April, like, let's say, or mid-April.
We will not hold you to that.
Please don't. When he comes back in June, like, I don't want to hear about it, you know? But when he comes back, like, there will have been, you know, a few starts at least that he, you know, didn't have to cover, so they might be able to give him a few more innings that are more consistent as a regular starter, because I think that was always going to be tricky. You don't want to use too much of Nate Pearson. Nate Pearson is not necessarily the guy for 2021. He's the guy for 2022, 2023, and beyond.
Yeah, so Laura, last one before we go, because I feel like we've been kind of negative. There's a couple bright spots on this Jays team through eight games or however many they've played. I can't even keep track already. That's bad. I love, obviously, what I've seen from Julian Merriweather. That stuff is just truly filthy. And he's like, that looks to be an elite arm that they got for Josh Donaldson. So that's nice. And you got to be incredibly encouraged from what we've seen from Vlad to start the year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're definitely, it's not all doom and gloom. I mean, if you were having this conversation last Saturday, everybody was pumped, right?
Yeah.
And by that point, they'd only won one game, but still, you showed up in New York, you did pretty well. And you know, it's not all terrible, but you're seeing really good signs from Vlad. You're seeing, I mean, fantastic signs from Julian Merriweather, particularly the fact that he can go more than one inning, I think is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
With that stuff. And so I think that, you know, there are good things happening, and you want to just make sure that you keep those guys. And I think that one of the things is that, like, listen, I know that Charlie Montoyo keeps saying hitting's contagious, and he's right. We know that he's right about that. But there's always going to have to be guys who sort of provide the good moments when other players are having a struggles. And this is what, you know, Vlad hasn't always necessarily been able to do in the last couple of years, because he's sometimes been the player who's struggling. And so for him to be able to step up and carry this team, particularly at the start of the year, I think it's huge. It's not to say that he's going to be, you know, consistently great for the entire season. But he's the kind of guy who has a higher, I think, floor even than most other players. And so when he, you know, is really sort of excelling, then it does a lot to carry the rest of his team. And I think that that's huge for him because he really hasn't been able to show that in the last couple of years. And he's the kind of guy, I think, who likes to be that guy. He looks a lot like the guy that we saw in the minor leagues, mm-hmm. With his plate approach and with his patience. And, you know, we've just really been waiting to see that. And I mean, you've heard all spring training, this is going to be the year that Vlad becomes the guy that everybody expected Vlad to be. And so far, so good.
Let's hope it keeps up. Unlike the Blue Jays injury luck to start the season. Laura, thoroughly enjoyed the chat. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks for having me, guys.
There she goes, Laura Armstrong, Toronto Star, Blue Jays beat writer there. Always love talking to Laura, one of our favorites. And that's the thing about Vlad is he's raised his floor this year. You know, it felt like the ceiling was as high as it always was in years past. But this year, the floor, what you're going to get out of the expectations, it's just, you just know you're going to have a higher kind of floor on that guy.
And, you know, we've seen in years past where he gets, I guess, last year, and other years past, where he gets down on himself when he gets scuffling. And it's nice that he just starts the year hot, because then that just puts him in the right position to go out there and play well. He's playing well at first. He's digging out some balls. You know, he's had a couple, you know, a little bit of a misplays or whatever, but I think he looks pretty good generally at first. So love what I've seen from the bat, obviously, liking what I see in the field. I'm excited about his year. Jay's just got to get going here. Just get a win today, get a rolling, and see what happens.
Yeah, 1,000%. Text line, keep them coming, 590-590. Please include your name and location. Want to read some of those. When we continue, we're going to dive back into the Masters as well. Our buddy John McCarthy joins us after 11. J.D. Bunkus just after that. Fun show. We got an hour and a half left here on Sportsnet today.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
One of the all-time upbeat songs with, like, terribly depressing lyrics, if you actually listened into it there. Great job by technical director Andrew Dutch Holland with us today. Always with us on Saturday mornings, our producer Dan Marino. Thanks to him as well. Put together a firecracker of a lineup. This is a little us time. You know, every couple, they need to make sure they reconnect, take a little us time. You know, we'll bring some friends back in the 11 o'clock hour. John McCarthy will join us. J.D. Bunkus will join us. Right now, it's time for me and you. Just stretch out a little bit. Share our thoughts. What do you got?
Well, we got some lots of texts that we should get to here before we get to big deal or no deal, right?
Let's do it.
Okay. So this one's from our boy Jeremy from Meaford.
I knew you were going to read this.
It's our first one. Our F1 insider. It says, breaking. Toronto man Sam McKee breaks land speed record on his way home to watch golf after work. More at 6. That's correct. But I'm going to be on my bike. So I'll get a nice little workout. You know why I did the bike in this morning? Because I knew that there was going to be zero exercise. So it's like, I got to do something because, you know, the Jays, the Masters, right into the Leafs, like there's going to be no time for me to do any outdoor activity. So that's why I rode the bike in this morning. So,
See, I thought you would have drove in because F1 doing us dirty. Once again, no race this weekend. I thought you want. Now, I will say, if you got to pick a Sunday to take off, Masters Sunday is great. Like, the race at 11 would have bled way too closely into Masters coverage, so I'm actually okay with it. But I thought you would have been there channel your Lewis Hamilton, but I know better than that. Channel your inner Max Verstappen.
That's what
I thought you were going to say. But instead, you're Lance Armstrong or Kurt Hartnett or, I don't know, somebody
just
on the bike.
Just as a quick aside on the F1 thing, way to capitalize on your new North American following, F1.
Who are you? The CFL?
Honestly,
what are you doing?
It was the most popular thing in the world for the opening week. You had this electric finish where, you know, old Lewis Hamilton, Mr. Golden Boy, wasn't allowed to get passed by anyone.
And then, Dutch, tell him he's wrong.
And then 3 weeks, 4 weeks, they just take a month off? Like, what are you doing here? So I was a little bit disgusted in that. But, yeah. So I will be going home very fast on my bike safely. But the bike lanes they put along Bloor in Toronto, I got to say, they did a spectacular job on it. I'm biased because it literally goes from the office to my house right along Bloor. Like, it's just straight, safe, really heavily used. Didn't really take up a bunch of the streets. So great job, Toronto, putting in those bike lanes. I absolutely love it. All right, next one here. Finau can't putt. Better off borrowing Happy Gilmore's hockey stick. John from Guelph. So, yeah, that's going to rear its head, you know?
For sure.
Tony,
for sure.
Tony's always in the mix. And look, I'm never, ever going to believe Tony can do it until he does it, right? He's that guy.
Yep. 1,000%.
Like, and I think, guess what? I think he could do it. Do I think it's within him? Nice little pairing. Him and I think it's him and Justin Thomas today,
it
which is
going to
be a nice driving, ball-striking clinic watching those two boys go at it. So, yeah, I like Fino. I'm like everybody else. I like Fino. Like, I think he seems like a really cool guy. He's a star of the game, got a sweet swing, hits it a mile. There's a lot to like, but I just don't think the putter's going to be there on Sunday at Augusta.
I don't even think it's going to be the putter that lets him down. I'm calling it right now. I am convinced. I don't know if it happens on 12. I don't know if it happens on 15. I don't know if it happens on 13. There's going to be an important water ball that does in his round on Sunday. That's going to be it. Like, maybe it's 11. Who knows? He doesn't get the lucky bounce Molinari got before Tiger ripped everyone's heart out.
Yeah.
But it just, that's what it feels like to me. It's just, he is one of these guys, and the putter is absolutely a problem, but it just feels like, I do think it's more of a problem with the guys like him. Bryson tends to go the other way where he's long all the time, but Finau's so strong. He's going to try to feather something in there. He's going to take a 9 when he should have taken an 8 or, you know, whatever the club ends up being. And I think that's going to be his undoing. You can see it now. It's like, oh, will it hold? No, it's trickling back into the drink. I can already see it coming. I think about, what time? I'm thinking 4:50 tomorrow afternoon. That'll be happening for Tony Finau.
Okay. We got some more. Lots of Masters texts this morning.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. Thoughts on Schauffele and Justin Thomas? Mioto from Richmond Hill. Just nailed that pronunciation. Great job by me. I don't really love Schauffele. Like,
You're a non-Schauffele guy.
Yeah, like, sure, like, they're always, guess what? I got to listen to every broadcast tell me about how great a golfer he is. He never wins. Bryson wins like every other week now, but he's have another protein shake because Schauffele's a nice, quiet guy. They love him, but he never wins anything. So there's my thought on Schauffele. And Justin Thomas is nasty, and he's definitely a big time threat to win this baby. So those are my thoughts on them. Gunner?
You are the most sensitive Bryson fan for the fan base that's all about jacked up dudes, and we can take it. We're tough. It's like the second someone says even what? One slight. Look.
The entire broadcast condescending him the entire time, you mean?
Here's the thing. You put your hand up and say, I'm different. I'm built different. I'm acting different. I'm going to wear this dumb hat. I'm going to swing like I'm a sideshow from the 1920s. You put your hand up and say, I would like the attention. You're going to get it. Do they hammer him? Absolutely. But it never ceases to amaze me that the tough dude, the athlete, can't take it. Little criticism, can't take it. I'm the opposite. I feel about Schauffele, I think, the way most people feel about Finau. I just find myself pulling for him. You're right. He is a perpetually cursed guy. He doesn't even have the Finau win at the Puerto Rico Open. But I really like his game. He does kind of feel like one of those guys who is destined in, I don't know, still in 5 years to be like, man, how many top fives at majors has Xander had? Or maybe he breaks through and wins at like the Tour Championship he's already done that actually. So that's the thing with Schauffele. I'm much more in the camp of him than I feel about him the way most people feel about Finau. Justin Thomas, I took him as my pick at our Masters bid. Mm. I shouted about when we were on Good Show giving out picks. I laid shekels on him to win. I laid shekels on him to top five. I love, love, love the way he drives the ball. I have said, I think it was a couple weeks ago we were talking about this, if you could give me anyone's swing on tour, that's the guy's swing I would want. We talked about this with the sleazy man, I believe.
Oh, yeah, true.
And it's just he has a nasty, vicious, vicious swing, and I love it. It's very different from a lot of what you see from a Finau, from a Rahm, where it's kind of much more contained, much more quiet, but I love watching Thomas play, and he gets fired up. He loves big fist pumps. Tiger has dubbed him Golf Son, so I like, and honestly, what's not to like about JT?
And I really loved
the one thing.
It was really
dumb, and all he did was own it. He didn't say, it's actually, owned it. He said it's dumb. He got dinged on it. He lost his sponsorship, and he moved on, because that's what he's supposed to do. So
this is text, has no name on it, but I'm going to assume it's from a guy named Charles. Making fun of a guy named Charles, that's amateur hour. Be better. Okay, we didn't make fun of a guy named Charles, because Charles is a completely normal name. We made fun of a guy with the name Charles. That's the weird
part.
We
asked why his name wasn't Charles. All I wanted to know is if we're still making those and if they only make them in South Africa. That's all.
All right. So this is my favorite text of the day, and you knew I was going to get to it. Yes, fellas, we all want to hear about the Masters and Bichette bobbling the ball, but how did Sam do on the bell hole at Thursday at Lakeview? Tyler in Port Credit. Okay, I hit a perfect drive, absolutely in the perfect position, A+. Hit one to what, 5 feet? And I missed a birdie putt. I missed the birdie putt. It was, I have never played the hole better. It was a perfect spot to be, and I missed the birdie putt, and I was extremely upset. But let's just say, Lakeview in the West End of Toronto, in pristine condition. The boys were the first tee time out on Thursday, on Masters Thursday, on the couch by 12:30, 17 and sunny. What a day for the boys out there then. So just had to get that in there, Gutter.
Because people definitely care. That's the best I've ever seen our group ever play that hole. Mm-hmm. Three darts on the green with approach shots. Might have been mine. Didn't end up there. It was a rough hole. But I will say I was trying to get some content out. That lovely Golf Guys video that we sent out was getting approved as I was playing that hole.
Okay.
So that's my excuse that I definitely would have butchered it anyways. And yeah, did you hear that? We were on the course at 9 on our couch by 12:30. If you need a pace setter for your course in the GTA,
call
it's your boys, Brent Cutting and Sam McKee, the Golf Guys, 1,000%. So thank you for sneaking that in.
No problem. All right, next one here. Can you tell me the contract status for Galchenyuk next season? Is he signed, Derek from Toronto? In fact, he is not, and it's the perfect scenario.
Yep.
The Leafs, they
play, can't even, if they want to, they can't.
They play him into a scenario where he's good enough to get maybe a tiny contract, maybe get, you know, over $1 million, get somewhere, like maybe get the Wayne Simmonds contract that he got here, play himself into a contract somewhere else. Play good enough that you earn a contract somewhere else. So he's a free agent for next year, Derek.
Galchenyuk's whole contract next year, like, he has done enough now, and as long as it continues like this throughout the regular season, he's getting a job somewhere next year. Like, that is taken care of. There's still a world where this guy, and again, it's like this line has been, I think, unfairly maligned a lot. The Nylander-Tavares pairing with him, there's a world where that line's super important on a cup team, and then you know what's going to happen? Someone's going to give that guy like $3 million, and it very well might be the Kraken, because what do they care about cap space? It doesn't matter at all. And feels like whoever gives him that contract, it's not going to work
out. They're
going to
regret
it. But good luck to him. Good luck.
Morning, guys. It's funny how a player to be named later in the Donaldson trade looks to be our closer of the future. I was one of the people that said, that's it, after the trade, but I can admit when I'm wrong. Go for it, Merriweather. David in Waterdown, our friend who texts in all the time. That's a great take, because I think it's one that all of Toronto had. That
I was going to say, he's one of. He's a person in the GTA.
Yes. And, you know, the offseason before that, 2017, it's the offseason where Shapiro and Atkins decided not to blow up the team. And to, you know, have another run with the sort of 2016, 2015 core, because they wanted to sort of give into the fan base a little bit in terms of thinking that they still had a chance to compete.
For sure.
And that was one of the big mistakes of the early era of this sort of front office. They really, really misjudged what this team was. And they apparently, the talk is that they could have always had Jack Flaherty for Josh Donaldson in that offseason from the Cardinals when they didn't trade him. And then he came back. He had the dead arm. It was just a bad thing. It was not pretty. But I think now you have to say that that trade is a 10 out of 10 success. You see what Josh Donaldson is now. He's obviously hurt in Minnesota. He signed a big contract. He's had some good years. But, you know, extracting a bullpen guy that can potentially go two innings, throw 100, have a nasty off-speed changeup, slider, got the whole mix. That's, in this era of baseball, that's so, so valuable. So you have to say they did well in that trade. And that's a great take by David in Waterdown. I agree 100%.
Yeah, and I think it's funny that it happens to coincide with this front office having landed Ryu and Springer in back-to-back free agent years. So it's like, it not only is everyone like coming around on them because you're seeing what Merriweather is, but then it's the fact that this team has kind of taken big, big strides in the last couple of years. Man, those Donaldson debates, like, I remember going to my Sunday morning skate, ooh, just getting
hot,
screamed at.
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean? A trade about all you got is this bum. He can't even pitch. His arm broken. I would love to walk into my dressing. Well, I wouldn't love to walk into my dressing room tomorrow morning because I'm scared of COVID and I want to watch the Masters. But I would love to walk into the dressing room and hear what the boys had to say about Merriweather, because I feel like it'd be a little bit different.
What I wouldn't give to just have the ability to walk into a hockey dressing room stress free at this moment. Those are things we can look forward to in the fall. We can look forward to that in the fall when we can all sort of, you know, play sports again. That'll be fun. What do we got here? One last one before we hit the break and then do Big Deal or No Deal. Good morning, boys. My dog might not get a walk today. Bad owner. Love you guys. Dan from G-Town, a guy who texts in all the time. It's true. Poor Lou Dog is just going to be rot on the couch looking at me all day. But you know me, I always give in. So I'll probably get home, sneak in the spin around the block, and then get the couch. You know, just get it over with, get him walked, and then have it done with. He's just a little wiener dog. He doesn't need much walking.
There's definitely a person who lives in my house who's been upstairs with a fussy baby for the last 3.5 hours who is going to be dying to get out of this house for a walk. So I might even join him.
Get it in there. It's supposed to be gorgeous out. You know, it's a nice day to get the, like you said, get the laptop going outside and then just enjoy your palatial gazebo, and then you can be good to go.
Laptop outside is definitely in play. You know what? I just realized, don't have any beverages in the fridge. So there's the purpose for said walk.
Guess what? I will be stopping on my way past at Bloor and Runnymede, the LCBO. Ooh. I will be stopping there and grabbing some orange crushes and enjoying the afternoon.
Oh, they sell those there. Yes. I thought it was other. I know that LCBO very, very well. Thanks for keeping them. Hey, keep coming on the text. I will sneak in a few more before we're done. 590-590. Please include your name and location. Got a few big deals or no deals to throw at Sam when we continue here on Sportsnet today.
Sportsnet 590.
Sportsnet today, Brent Gunning, Sam McKee alongside me. A little more than an hour left in the show and lots still to do. Our buddy J.D. Bunk is here. I'm on Good Show all the time. He's going to stop by and join us. You know, just repaying the favor. You know, we were so kind, definitely didn't enjoy getting the pub at all on his super popular show. So we were kind enough to give him our platform, you know, just completely equal trade happening there. Not like he's doing us a favor on this lovely Saturday to stay inside and talk on the radio with us at all. He's going to join us at 11:25. Our buddy John McCarthy of the Toronto Sun going to dive back into the Masters with us in about 15 minutes time. But right now, it's time. Big deal or no deal. Oh, there it is. The dulcet tones of... Not tones. I guess tones, yeah. Yeah, music's tones. There we go. Normally, dulcet tones is somebody's voice, but those are just dulcet tones of tone. All right, that's awkward. I'm going to stop talking. We just talked about the Jays, so let's dive back in there. You know, normally there's like a kind of tent pole with a big deal or no deal, like there's a number or a fact. This is just, it's kind of an opinion, but I know you're going to agree with me.
Mm.
So big deal or no deal, Jordan Romano can't hold a runner to save his life.
It's a huge deal. It's hard to watch. It's really driving me insane. And, you know, I want to love this guy. Canadian. He had a great year last year. Looked like his stuff really played. But here's the thing. You were somewhat unknown last year. Expectations. There's tape on you. All these teams know. Combine the fact with, you know, that he was pitching to Alejandro Kirk, who can't throw out anybody anyway. And then you have him holding, it's a bad mix for a late inning reliever. And it's something he's really going to want to have to work on. It's a huge deal. It's not, there's no way to sort of mix words here. It is a absolute big deal. So yeah, Jordan, got to hold those runners, buddy. It's going to hurt you big time.
I agree. It's a big deal. And the reason I think it is because this isn't something you can like, it feels like this isn't something you can work on throughout the year. Maybe this is something you can work on throughout the spring, but I can't imagine on his off days when he's throwing a side session or throwing a bullpen that they're like, okay, you know what? Let's just pretend there's a runner here. And instead of just going through your work to get your arm to where it needs to be, let's throw in weird scenarios and you're throwing pickoff. Like you can work on a pickoff move. I'm not saying you can't do that, but that I would imagine that's not the issue, is simply the move. Of course, it's part of it, but it just feels like it's just not in his psyche at all. And it's a really weird thing because it's one of the kind of smaller parts of being a, like, how many conversations throughout all the years have we had at pitchers? And this is not something that comes up very often. We talk about a guy's move. He doesn't have a good move, but the idea of not being able to even hold, even look, even pause. I don't know how you fix it. If anybody can, I imagine it's Pete Walker. You know, you hear nothing but amazing things from people inside and outside of the organization about him. So I'd imagine that if anybody can help with it, it's Pete. But it feels to me like it's something that cannot be fixed in season. And if that's the case, I don't know how reliable of a kind of late inning, like, he could still be reliable in terms of the stuff, but if you feel like he can't hold a runner, can you throw him in there with a guy on first if they're going to just pinch run for somebody who could swipe second? Like, it creates a lot of questions for how you use him going forward.
Yeah, and it's a great point, that one I wouldn't have really necessarily thought of, but like, that isn't really something you work on. You want to work on keeping your arm healthy. You want to keep on, you know, getting into your routine. But I don't know. It's just he does that exaggerated squat. And even when they're on base, he kind of does it. It's just it's a weird looking thing. So he's got to figure it out because he's a guy they're going to have to lean on now. Chatwood's got out now, apparently. So that's a big blow to their bullpen. Like, man, it's just started bad. And, you know, it's a long year. And you just, like, you just pray that this doesn't get out of control and that they're out of it in April. Like, that's just, like, you know, that's just, it's a real nightmare scenario to have a bad start. Just get through April a game or two under 500 or a game or two over 500. Just grind your way to a 500 April and let it go from there. Let the weather warm up, but they're in Florida. It's always warm. So, just survive. Survive it.
We're all Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder right now. Just survive. All right, this will shock you. I'm going to move to hockey. I know this will shock you, but this is where I'm going. All right, the Colorado Avalanche have the best goal differential in the NHL at plus 47. Who cares? But it's 10 goal differentials, however you want to say that, better than the next best team in the league. And then there's a group that's kind of jammed in there at 37, plus 37, plus 34. Big deal or no deal that the Avalanche are that far ahead of everybody in goal differential?
I feel like that's a big deal because I feel like goal differential is one of the bigger stats in terms of determining who is a really sort of elite team and who's kind of a pretender, right? That's kind of the one you look at. And, you know, I go and look at their division because, God, I hate to admit that. I still don't really know who's in any divisions outside of the North, which is a bad thing to admit as a sports talk radio host. But, yeah, I'm not an American hockey guy. I'm a Canada hockey guy. But, like, and they don't necessarily have the easiest division. And it's not like you can say, like, the Lightning are kind of lighting up that crappy division. And, you know, there's the other two divisions aren't necessarily great. But, like, they got some real teams that got to go up against the Blues. Arizona's been better this year. San Jose's still not a pushover. Like, I feel like that's a big deal. And I feel like they're really, really, really good. And, like, I feel like if the Leafs are going to want to go to a Stanley Cup final or potentially win a Stanley Cup, I feel like they're going to have to deal with the Colorado Avalanche at some point. And that could be a bit of a wake-up call after playing some of the teams in the North a bit. But guess what? Every team's going to go through it. So I don't know if it's really that huge a deal. A lot of the teams will be thinking the same way about the Toronto Maple Leafs if they do get that far. So I think the Colorado Avalanche are really good. And I think a plus 47 goal differential is a really big deal. Plus 47 is a lot, Gunner.
So I agree with everything you said. I'll stamp it as big deal as well. But I'm going to add one more thing. They got blown out 8-3 this week, and they're still 10 goals differential clear of anybody else. Like, they got blown out by the Wild 8-3, and it did kind of have me thinking, again, like you just mentioned it. We don't talk about the Avalanche. Like, every once in a while, we do this segment we're doing right now where we give the cursory, a lot of good teams out there, haven't been paying attention, and you give them the respect. But it further shows, like, if the Leafs got thumped like that, 8-3, it would be sky is falling. What is this team? Bunch pretenders. And you know what happened in Colorado?
Nothing.
They just went out 1-2-0 against the Ducks the very next time.
They were just too busy hanging out in cool Colorado, you know.
That's right.
Smoking weed and just hanging out there. Like, that's all they were
doing. Hit the slopes, bro.
Yeah, I don't feel like it really. They got broken up over that 8-3 loss. It would have been a national referendum here, but there, it's not really that big a deal. I actually have a little big deal or no deal for you here.
Okay, hit me.
Okay. This is from Justin Ray Golf on Twitter, who is a spectacular follow.
So good, yeah.
We got to get him on the golf show one of these days. Mm. Players with a one-shot lead through 36 holes at the Masters have won 8 times in 28 attempts. And the last convert in that situation was Trevor Immelman in 2008. Big deal or no deal?
Okay, so every time I read a Justin Ray stat, I'm like, big deal. That's the hugest thing ever. But it's like, well, it's Saturday, and it's a one-shot lead, and there's always good guys in the mix at the Masters.
Correct.
So it's the idea of, you know, if it was a five-shot lead and they only converted 8, yes, that's a huge red flag. But it's just the fact of the matter is there's a lot of good dudes in contention every year at the Masters. So the fact that somebody clipped somebody by one shot over 36 holes on one of the toughest golf courses in the world, not all that surprising to me. So I want to say it's a big deal, but it's not.
It's not a big deal. That's the correct take. And I just have to think, you know, Justin Rose is a veteran. He's a major winner. He's won a ton on tour. He's a great player. He's one of the guys that all the players on tour revere. You know, he was part of that when they played at that like weird Tiger course. Remember that?
Oh, yes, that's right.
What was that place called? Payne's Valley?
Payne's Valley.
Yeah.
Payne's Valley.
So he was part of that. Like, he's obviously like a star on tour.
He's a guy.
And I don't know how much, like, he's getting up there. Like, I don't know how many more chances he's going to have, right? Like, this is a big weekend for him, and he's starting last, and there's so many elite players chasing him. There's no way he's not feeling an insane amount of pressure heading into this weekend. And I will be extremely happy if Justin Rose wins the Masters. Honestly, like, he's a type, not financially. I have a lot of financial equity in him not, you know, winning the Masters. But I would love to see him win the Masters. He's a guy out there. He's been a great story. Always plays well at the Masters. Obviously lost in that playoff in 2017 to Sergio. But this is a big, big, tall ask for him. A huge ask to hold off all these players. Every great player you can think of chasing him. And he's got his boy Willie Z chasing him. He's playing with Willie Z. I have a hard time believing that Justin Rose is going to win the Masters. But I could be wrong. But I feel like this is a way too hard a task. Don't you?
I wholeheartedly agree. You just mentioned the playoff in 2017. In hindsight, how dirty do you feel that you're like, come on, Sergio, get it done? Like,
one
I was
of my
right there
all-time
too.
Greatest regrets is how hard I cheered for Sergio. When he made that eagle on 15 on Sunday, like the one that just fell in over the lip, I fist pumped and was like, yeah! And
I yelled back vamos at in the Sportsnet newsroom, okay? That's what happened to me.
And looking back on that, that's sickening. That's sickening. I hate Sergio. Sergio is right up there with Phil and the guys I can't stand, and I cheered for it hard. Ugh, gross.
Justin Rose also pulling the reverse U. He's got an old driver in the bag dominating this week. He went back to 2017's M1 from TaylorMade.
So I got to say, I feel that. You know, I spent a lot of money. I won a golf pool, spent a lot of money on a new driver. And it's capital S squirrely right now. And I'm really going through it with it. And I'm seeing Justin Rose go back to the old M1. That old burner's still out in my little garage. I'm like, ooh, maybe. Maybe today's the day, burner. But I got to stick with the old Maverick. So I feel your pain, Justin. I feel your pain.
All right, I'm going to sneak in one more. I don't know if you've been keeping tabs on this. It's been a story I've been kind of I just interested in all year long. In the WHL, I know it doesn't feel like junior hockey's happening because the OHL hasn't been a thing.
Only place in the world they're not playing hockey is in Ontario.
That's right. And hey, it's not like they produce the most NHLers per capita. It's not like that at all. So Connor Bedard, he's the kind of latest of the exceptional status kids.
I've been seeing.
Big deal or no deal? At 15 years old, he just wrapped up his WHL season, and he did so with an overtime winner, and he leads the league in scoring. Big deal, or he's 15. Can I say that again? Big deal or no deal?
That's a huge deal. Do you have the point total? I'm just going to look it up.
Yeah, it's 28 points in less than that. It's more than a point per game. I don't have the games in front of me. 15 games. Pretty good.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, guess what? I always get super excited when the next guy that's going to be great for Canada. Like, I love this because it's like America's like, the golden generation. It's like, every 5 years, we have another guy that's like the best guy who's ever lived. That's what I love about Canada. So, yeah, big deal. Connor Bedard, our next guy. Lovely from the dub. Feel like we haven't had one from the dub in a while. So I love having like an exceptional status, nasty guy that plays in the West of Canada. So give me Connor Bedard. That's a huge deal. 15 years old. Do you know how young 15 years old is? That is disgustingly
young. Think about how unable to do anything you were at 15.
Yeah, I was able to grow my hair.
Yeah, and, that's
you know,
about
be
it.
Be late for class. Sleep. Yeah, sleep. Be mad at my parents. Be broody. That was pretty much all I had the ability to do. Yeah.
So just to put in perspective of how nasty this is, he has one more point than Peyton Krebs, who was a first-round pick in 2019. Like, just again, like when old Connor was 13 years old, Peyton Krebs was getting drafted in the first round, and Connor Bedard just clipped him by one point for the WHL scoring title. And then you know my theory on this. Some guys are magic. He scored the OT winner. Apparently, a family member of his passed away in a car accident just before. And then he scores the OT winner. He wins the scoring title. I'm not saying that really matters. Like, of course, what's important is him and dealing with that loss. But some guys are just magic. And I hear a story like that early on in a guy's career, I just file it away. And I'm so happy you brought up the point about the States, because that's great. Program of excellence. Auston Matthews, amazing. Jack Eichel, okay, sure. Yeah. Every couple years, there's a guy. Maybe Lafreniere. Maybe we got a little ahead of our skis there. Maybe.
Maybe enough about that one.
But that's okay, because we got another 15-year-old coming from the dub, Connor Bedard. I'm sure the Oilers will land him with the first pick whenever that comes up. You know what's happening.
The only guy who's ever actually loved it, too.
Yeah, that's right. He will be the only one not sad. We still have the pictures of the other Connor. Yeah, we saw those.
We know. Come home, Connor.
Yeah, that's right. He will. He'll take John Tavares' exact spot and salary spot. That's exactly how it's going to work out. I've given that theory many times. I will give it many more in the next 6 years. What else I'll do? I'll get you John McCarthy. He's going to slide in, talk a little golf. Our buddy, John McCarthy, he's been playing some. I'm sure, I hope. He's definitely been watching some. We'll talk about it all with him. 1 hour left on Sportsnet Today.
This is Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I feel like if we're doing kind of timestamps for where we're at in the show to a round at Augusta, I feel like we're just hitting Amen Corner right now, McKee. Mm. I feel like that's about right, right? We still got an hour left in the show, yeah. So we're not just starting the second nine. No, we're right into Amen Corner right now, and who better to join us on one of the most picturesque stretches of golf? A man who invited us out to quite a picturesque stretch of golf last year, John McCarthy, joins us now from the Toronto Sun. John, how you doing, bud?
I'm great, and I love Amen's Corner. It's the best place. I mean, you meet the right person there, you can spend the rest of your life on a rocking chair with a drink in your hand.
There we go. Wow, what a start. What a start for you, John McCarthy. Yeah, it's something about it, right? I was doing our golf show earlier this morning, and I was kind of trying to think of what is the one hole that's going to kind of what's going to really kind of change things this weekend. And of course, it'll be different depending who's at top, but it just feels to me like somebody really in the mix is going to find the water, be it at 13, be it at 12, be it at 15. It feels to me like one of those three holes is just going to kind of completely change the weekend, be it today, be it tomorrow. What do you make of that?
No, I certainly agree. I think it's probably going to be 15, but by the time they get there, somebody's going to, you know, make it there or break it there for sure. It's a par five or your second shot. You have to decide whether you're going to take on the water or you're going to lay up. And with the conditions being so firm at the moment, I mean, it's very hard to hold that green. But even the layup, it's a tough layup because the fairway is so slanted and you can get some funky lies there. So you can end up with an 80-yard shot, but you still have to aim like 30 feet away from the hole on your, you know, even if you're laying up. So I think 15 is going to make or break it come Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And, you know, John, I've got to play a lot of nice golf courses in my life. Obviously, I've never come close to sniffing Augusta. But if there's one shot in my whole life that I would love to try, it's sitting right at the top of that fairway on 15 looking down at that green. It's just such a great visual. It's such a perfectly designed hole. It's so intimidating. Having that over the back miss, the short miss, the trap, like it's just such a perfectly designed hole. And that middle of the fairway there is such an incredible shot.
Yeah, no, it's certainly an amazing hole. And that you love watching the players try and chip from, you know, they'll hit it over the back of the green. Then they've got that delicate pitch back to the green with the water on the other side. So it's so many amazing holes there. I'd like to stand there on 12 and try and hit that shot too.
Yeah, that's true too. Wouldn't mind that. So we're heading in here. It's obviously a stacked leaderboard. I mean, what are you looking at most heading into to Saturday, Sunday here? Is it the Rose story? Is it Spieth? I mean, what's got your attention the most, Johnny?
Well, I think I want to see how the leaders get off right out of the gate today, because we saw yesterday Justin Rose stumbled out and then he sort of regained himself and took the lead again. But the tournament changes so dramatically. If these two of the top three guys sort of falter off the top, all of a sudden, then you're going to have like 15 guys right around the lead. So it's already kind of packed, but if these leaders get off to a slow start, it's going to be as wide open as we can remember. And obviously everyone's going to be watching Jordan Spieth. What a story that's been.
Yeah, Spieth is let's just land on that for a second. You know, two back and again, the point I've been kind of making is if there were other names at the top of this leaderboard, and I know Thomas and Finau are kind of lurking there, but if it was the Koepka, if it was the DJ, if it was Rory having the week that he's capable of, albeit never at this place apparently, if it was those guys at the top, I would feel like, man, that's a lot for Jordan Spieth to overcome. I don't know that he has the firepower. He has the flat stick to battle with any of those guys, but I don't know that he's going to have the kind of, you know, raw power to kind of compete with those guys. But when you look at the group, Zalatoris, Rose, Harmon, Kim, okay, Champ hits it a long way, but I don't expect him to be a factor kind of late. It feels to me like if Spieth could kind of pick the guys he was duking it out with, this would kind of be exactly the group he would set himself up with.
Yeah, and we all know funny things happen at Augusta. Like the mojo you can pick up, it's, and nobody rides that wave better than Jordan Spieth. So it's like he said on Thursday when he chipped it in on 15, and if it had not hit the stick, it would have rolled in the water and it turned an eagle into a, you know, bogey or worse. And he said that was the luckiest break he's had in his life. And I sort of stopped and thought about it. I'm thinking, think of all the things we've seen Jordan Spieth do. And he just said that's the luckiest break he's ever had in his life. So I think when a player like that is feeling it like that, he's obviously got to be, if he's not the favorite right now, he's right up there. So he's when he won in 2015, I've been covering golf for maybe 12, 13 years, going to all these majors usually. And his win in 2015 was probably the most impressive golf I've seen. The only thing that rivaled it to me was Tiger Woods at Royal Melbourne for the President's Cup. I mean, the greens at Royal Melbourne were very similar to the ones at Augusta this week, so rock hard. And Tiger was just a cut above the rest with his iron play. So those would be the two greatest displays of golf I've ever seen in my time in person, was Jordan Spieth in 2015 and Tiger at the President's Cup.
Yeah. So I got to ask you about that triple he made on Thursday, because I thought that was one of the more relatable moments on the tour I've seen in a long time. And I feel like Jordan at times can have a sort of everyman game at certain times with his squirreliness off the tee. Is that okay to say? But it was so funny to me when he just was spending so much time. He comes out from behind the tree, looks, comes out from behind the tree and looks. And then he just smokes it right at the tree he was looking at the entire time. And it's just like, yeah, I've done that move before, John. I know that move. So the fact that he made a triple and he's still right in contention shows you how sick he's been playing the rest of the time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that shot was hilarious, because he said after the round, he said, you know, I really wasn't going to gain much by trying that as opposed to chipping out. And you're thinking, well, if you weren't going to gain much, that's a pretty tough shot to pull off. And it was also, as a right-hander with the tree in front of you to your right, you can't see around it. So you're sort of naturally going to give yourself a little more space on the right. And that's what he did. And he hit that gigantic tree right in front of him.
It was so loud. Like, I've made the comparison. It sounded like Vlad just barreling something up. Like, he could not have hit that any more purely if he was aiming for it. Yeah, the old just aim right at the tree, I'm sure I'll miss it move works for me. A multiple-time major winner, especially at that place. Definitely not. How far down the leaderboard do you think we can go today? I mean, the weather's going to come in, it looks like, this afternoon. That might really bring a lot more guys into play. Like, if you look at, a Corey Connors at 2-under, maybe you have Bryson at 1-under. How far down do you think guys can really think they still have a shot at this?
Yeah, well, I might go a little further down than most, because the way the course was, I mean, if the weather didn't come in and the course stayed dry, I still think it's a course that can come out and bite any of these leaders at any time. So I do think that the players right down to even, I mean, it wouldn't be every player at even par, but you look at some guys at even, like, you know, John Rahm obviously has a game that's a little different than others. So if some of these guys at even get hot and the leaders do falter, so they could definitely make a run. And the weather, I mean, if it does come in and it gets windy, that can knock them down. If it doesn't come in and it stays dry, it's not like it's a piece of cake out there. It's been one of the toughest weeks we can remember. So I think more of the field is in play this year than in past years, when you'd normally want to just look at sort of the top 10 or 15.
Yeah, I like going down the leaderboard to the Canadian flag tied for 13 and Corey Connors and thinking that he's in play. I mean, he's playing with Morikawa today. The boys were talking on the golf show earlier about what a stripe show that's going to be, watching Morikawa and Connors hit irons today. But, you know, Connors, we've talked about how great a year he's been having. You know, he was in contention at a couple of the big ones earlier this season. He's poised nicely to have a big Saturday here and to get himself maybe potentially into one of the last four pairings heading into tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, he certainly is. I mean, he's proven himself as one of the best ball strikers in the world already. I mean, yesterday he hit 14 and 14 fairways, which is, you know, can't do too much better than that.
No.
And so with him, you really want to look at his putter. When he has the first, you know, sort of 6-8 footers early in the round, if he's rolling those in and he's feeling confident with the putter, it's also how quick he if you're watching online on the app, if they're not showing him on TV, check out how long he's lining up putts. If he's making quick decisions on the greens, then he's usually feeling pretty good. So I think with Corey, it's going to be all about whether he's rolling them in early, and if he is, then look out, because we all know he can hit it, as stripe it as well as anybody.
Okay, you've seen a lot of things in golf. You just mentioned all the majors you've covered. You've seen some tremendous play in person. You ever seen, now we've all heard tales. You ever seen a guy break their putter at Augusta on the second nine at one of the most famous holes and then putt better than his group with the three wood? Have you ever seen that before, John McCarthy?
I will say no, I have not seen that. And I did, that was so beautiful when he snapped it and then he stood there for maybe 10 seconds thinking he might be the only one that knew he snapped it. So he's looking sort of casual. Then he looks over at the caddy and waves him over and has to switch it out. That's certainly unique. And then he two putts the next four holes with a five wooder, I believe, or a three wood. So that was quite something. Like I saw Sergio Garcia snap his putter over his knee and throw it in the garbage. And I was the only one that saw it at the Players Championship. And I happened to tweet a photo about it. And then next thing I know, I'm blocked by Sergio Garcia on Twitter. So it's now my claim to fame.
Wow.
Not missing anything.
Yeah. I mean, if there's anyone I would choose to be blocked by, it'd be him. I got to ask you, because Curtis Strange was talking about it on the broadcast. He was mentioning that he would rather use like the edge of a wedge than a five wood to putt. What would you prefer if you had no putter? I think I would go five wood too. The edge of a wedge seems like there's a lot of room for error.
Yeah, I mean, some guys do practice a lot of that sort of bellying the ball from just off the green with your lob wedge or something like that. So players that do that in their game, I would think it would be a no brainer for them to putt like that. And pretty much every pro out there, I mean, they're not missing the face or the edge or anything they want. So most of them, I do think, would use a wedge. Me, I don't know. I think I might just go in and get a drink.
That's a good call. The right answer. Well done. Boy. Oh, man, I got to say, not surprised. You were a pleasure to play with, so not surprised that would be your answer. You look at the top of the leaderboard, Rose and Zalatoris. Obviously, both guys, you know, one of them's a major winner. He's flashed a ton of game in the past. Zalatoris has been kind of the sexy. Every time I'm looking at fantasy picks or who I should take in my pool, somebody's selling me on Will Zalatoris. This is the guy who's going to have the breakthrough. And now we're finally seeing it. Which of those two guys being up there surprises you more?
I mean, they certainly both are very surprising. I got a text from a friend who said, Will Zalatoris looks like an alignment stick, which I hadn't heard that before. more surprising, though, I guess I would say Rose, because he's been off for a month with a bad back. He hasn't really, I mean, so he'd worked with Sean Foley, a famous Canadian golf coach, for 11 years, and they split up at the beginning of last year, and Rose had a brutal season. So then he rejoined with Foley last year, and they got down to some work during the Florida swing this year while Rose was hurt. And, I mean, I guess it's done wonders for his game, but it is very surprising to come off of a month of not playing any tournaments and do what he did, especially on Thursday. But talk about it's a good time to be Sean Foley right now. The guy goes back with Rose, and Rose does this. Mm-hmm. Last week, Lydia Ko, another one of his reclamation projects, she shoots a major championship lowest round ever on Sunday at the A&A. And Cameron Champ is another Sean Foley guy, and he's four under. So Sean Foley's looking
good.
Stay
hot, Sean.
I have talked to Sean Foley, and I'll tell you, the guy's so full of positivity. He is the guy. If you're not feeling good about anything, he's the guy you want to talk to. I mean, I walked in after 20 minutes of him, and I thought I was like Herbert Warren Wind when I was writing my golf articles. He convinced me. He can convince you you're anything.
I love it. So my last one, I got a couple ones here. What do you, at the end of Sunday at 7 p.m., who's slipping on the green jacket?
Jordan Spieth.
That's my gut too, boys. I got to say, like, just the fact that he made that triple, he's still in contention. He's looking good. He's looking like old Spieth. That's my pick too. And my second thing is, have you played yet? And how's the game looking, Johnny?
Okay, well, that's a bit of a sore spot. No, I haven't played. I got a lot of texts this week when it was nice outside, but I was typing away at my computer, doing videos and newsletters and watching the Masters. You know, I'm looking for sympathy here with the tough job I have. But I think I'm gonna get out next week as much as I can if the weather works.
Okay. Well,
the game is great. Don't worry.
I'm not gonna make you feel any better, but I've only played five times or so far.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no problem.
I've played three. Nice. Hacking it up as you know well. John, always love the chat. Thanks so much for
taking
the time,
bud. Talk soon, bud.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
There he goes, John McCarthy, golf writer, content beast as well. You hear him. Again, what a tough – I was saying it to the – you know, I joke, you're my golf Sam, and then I have my life partner Sam. And I'm saying, look, I am the host of the golf show. I cannot leave this couch. I must watch the Masters from sunup to sundown. Look, I don't want to. I desperately want to, and I did. Yeah,
buddy, you sent me a picture yesterday. I think you maybe put on the gram too. It was like,
yeah.
Three TVs, a laptop, a iPad, a baby involved. Like, there was a lot going on there. So
I had the featured groups, Amen Corner, 15 and 16. Okay. And then on the laptop, my Masters group, by the way, my Masters. I know you're going to do a little complaining.
I got it.
If you're going to do that, you have to also talk about how good the Masters website is.
The Masters app is truly unbelievable. And yesterday afternoon, I snuck in my second favorite outdoor activity in the summer. I went out and I banged a few chains, played a little disc golf. But as I was doing that, I was just watching every single one of the shots that I wanted to watch. You click on the guy, he shows up, he shows you his shots. It's really, really unbelievable how good the Masters app is. But the Masters coverage. I'm going to do this. Hey, guess what? What's the time? Okay, 2022, April 10th. At this time, if I'm still doing the show at this time this year, this will be the same complaint, so I might write it down. It's like the news. It's a yearly thing. I cannot stand the Masters coverage. Why in 2021, when Jordan Spieth is lighting it up, Justin Thomas making birdies, I'm sitting here watching Cooch whack it into the woods, miss the cut, Phil Mickelson. I love Shane Lowry, so I'm not going to get down on Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry, at least they had Rosie in the group, but they had my boy Scotty Scheffler. There was some things to watch. But just start the coverage at 7 a.m. and do it till 7 p.m. It's not that hard. Just do it. They do it for every other major. Why are you so – I hate you and love you so much, Masters. Anyways.
What? Can I give you one silver lining?
Yes.
One. Ricky Fowler was not a part of those featured groups.
Thank God.
He would have taken Shane Lowry's place.
For sure.
In that group.
And he would have played way worse.
1,000%. He wouldn't have had the funny moment where he threw his divot back at his caddy. Somebody said that Shane Lowry and his caddy look like the future versions of each other. I really, really enjoyed that. Spoiler alert. I really, really enjoyed the golf. I'm going to double down on my pick here. I still like Justin Thomas. The fact that we've talked a lot about golf today, and he's the guy that's like, oh, yeah, and don't forget Justin Thomas. It feels like him getting him in a world where he can be kind of forgotten man, sneak up, just kind of play his game, go chase something. That is certainly scary. And also, I wanted to get this in. You and John both talked about the shot you would love to you would love to get to play. I think I'd have to go 16. The tee shot at 16 with the Sunday
pin.
It fits my eye. Well, nothing fits my eye around there because everything is right to left.
Right there, the water's on the left. The water. Yep, I think exactly. Like that would work for you.
And then just let me hit that hill, let it trundle. I'm clarifying. I need the Sunday pin. I want nothing on that back shelf. The Sunday pin with it funneling down. I'm astonished that you said the second shot on 15 because you've been talking to me your entire life. 13 tee shot,
but
yeah.
I will say, not to brag, got to play wooden sticks last year, so I did get to play a replica of it. So I got to see what it kind of looks like out there. Ah, what an exciting bogey I made on that hole. Wow, what a hole. But no, that cut around the corner, the way that I could just, you know, my driver's squirrely to the left so I could just aim way right and put it right down the middle. That'd be really nice. I love 13 there. I love a lot of the holes. The front nine is just so demanding. And that's why it's such a perfect golf course, because you go out, it's hard going out. If you put together a good front nine, you're looking at a really good scorecard. If you put together a really bad net front nine, you can still get it back with the scoreable holes in the back. So it's a perfectly designed course. Like I've said, obviously it's Augusta. No duh, it's perfectly designed. It's the nicest golf course on the planet Earth. It's not really a shock. But yeah, I can't wait for today, man. I'm frothing at the mouth.
It's just the thing too, and it's a little bit of like manufactured drama or whatever, but the fact that there's the two par fives, like it always feels way tighter than it is because it's like somebody makes eagle on 15 to go two up and the leader has not even got to 13 yet. And they got two par, like there's just always a lot in the air, stuff's mixing around. Oh man, the November Masters was special, but having it back at this normal date, ooh baby.
Yes, you reminded me. I got the take. I want to... Watching this tourney and watching the way this has been playing, and now that there's patrons back and the greens are lightning fast and it looks like Augusta again, and we were also just so juiced up for the November Masters. We hadn't had really great sports leading into that. That green jacket feels like it should be a little different shade of green for me. Feels a little asterisk-y, buddy, that DJ green jacket. Shooting 20 under... You know, just not even really. I guess he had Cam Smith breathing down his neck a bit. Sungjae Im, who was playing really well. I just don't think it was the same thing. It's just not the Masters. And sure, he'll always have that green jacket. He can always say it. There's no patrons. It was way slower than it usually is. It played way, way easier. Kevin Kisner said it, that he feels bad for this being people. That was the first Masters people got because they didn't get a real feel for it. We saw Sungjae Im. That happened to him. Boy, oh boy, did he have a bad weekend. But man, that's an asterisk green jacket. I know it's probably going to be a spicy take, but that's what I truly, truly believe.
I don't hate it. But I'd say the fact that DJ has stamped it with another major, like if that was the first major, I am all the way in. The other thing I would say is that Augusta is maybe the one venue, and I know we always talk about the patrons and the roars, but I feel like that is probably the one venue in the sport, maybe the Old Course, where you feel the pressure, you feel the ghosts,
no matter what.
There's not a soul there.
Okay, that's interesting.
Because think of you. You look at 12, it always looks like the, like you cannot convince yourself this is not 12 at the Masters. You see the you see the azaleas. I guess there weren't as many of them, but it's just the fact that just being there provides that pressure. So I'm not poo-pooing it, but here's the thing. If this was Tony Finau, if this was, you know, if this was Mark Leishman, if this was Billy Ho, if this is some guy winning their first major, I am all the way there with you on this. But the fact that DJ has done it before, he's had all the close calls, and the fact that it's at Augusta and that course alone piles on the pressure, I'm not all the way there, but I don't hate it.
Okay. That's good. Let's you know who I'm definitely gonna ask that? Bunkus.
JD.
Oh yeah, because he's gonna give me a hot take.
Do, though? Right. You know what else you're gonna do? You're gonna give us the Leafs news that you texted me while we were talking to John McCartney.
Yeah,
that's pretty important.
I thought this was interesting because Sheldon Keefe is talking right now, and I'm just pulling up the tweet. Keefe, and this is from Lance Horby, who beautifully tweeted this out. Our boy Lance Keefe on Anderson going to the LTIR. There's a move there, but he's leaving the rest to Dubas to comment on. Be more cryptic. Like, that seems pretty cryptic, right? Like, that's a pretty surprising thing to read. And there's other stuff on it as well. But, yeah, that is that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'll add this. This is from another buddy of ours. Guy, you talk about adding to the foursome. A dream add to the foursome. Reporter Chris.
Oh, yeah, I would love that.
Sheldon Keefe on Frederick Anderson. I think the easiest way to describe it is there's no timeline to the injury. Mm. It's just really a matter of Fred being comfortable with where he's at and how he's feeling.
Yeah.
Exactly what you want to hear about a goaltender who has had trouble getting healthy. Exactly what you want to hear.
They're being incredibly vague on purpose. They don't want they don't want anything coming out, and they're going to put them on LTIR and use the cap space. It's going to happen.
But they don't want it. But they don't want to say it. Because
exactly.
Then teams immediately the price for Taylor Hall or whoever they end up
bingo.
Getting.
Bingo. And
so
then
there it is.
And guess what? I'm sure that the rest of the league will love when the Leafs, you know, Kucherov did it, and the owner of the Leafs do it, they'll feel the same way about it because they got upset when the Leafs had, you know, NHL refs at their practice skates. So
they got upset when the Leafs opened their barn in the summer so guys could skate. Like the amount of things that the league has complained about the Leafs doing, and then the Tampa Bay Lightning just go put the MVP on LTIR even though he was skating 2 months before he's going to come off. That's fine. It's all totally above board and fine. You know who else would love to put on a tinfoil hat and yell about that with us, I bet? Our buddy, JD Bunkus. You hear him on Good Show, you're going to hear him right here next on Sportsnet Today.
Sportsnet 590, 590, The Fan.
Show is just flowing by today. Just flying. Leafs are making moves. We have stuff to put on a tinfoil hat about. It's a golf major. It's the golf major. It's moving day. And our buddy is here, JD Bunkus. We were on with him earlier this week. You know, we were saying, Bunk, you know, we both have totally equal platforms to share with each other. So you shared yours, and now we're just in return giving you the pub back.
That's right.
Ooh,
good.
You're connected. Ooh, you sound clean like you're here with us, buddy. Nice,
profesh.
Nice to hear you.
Very profesh. I was listening to you guys a little bit earlier. I'm prepared for tinfoil hats. You know what else I'm prepared for?
What?
Having a little early Masters nap, watching Billy Horschel and Phil Mickelson like anybody cares. I swear they make the cut line just a little bit higher at the Masters just so you can have that early morning nap. Because whoever watches this with any interest? Like these guys' parents? Is that it?
Well, no. It's all the Phil guys love it. The Phil guys. Buddy, there's Phil
old guys.
Guys. There's Phil guys.
My father-in-law loves Phil.
They think he can win?
No, no.
No, they just wanted, they literally just want to see him walk around, like stick up his thumb, tip his cap, maybe hit a couple decent wedges. That's all they want. That's it. That's all they want.
Hooray. Right. Hooray for Phil and Billy Horschel. Way to go, Billy. Like, you're doing
Billy Horschel, crushing it.
Yeah, he's crushing it. All right. Five overs. Real crushing it.
All right. If Phil Mickelson is my father-in-law's man, you know, Freddie Anderson's been your man for a while. And I don't know if you heard, Bunk. There's been some cryptic comments about Freddie Anderson. There will be a move. I have the tweet here from Chris Johnston up. I think the easiest way to describe it is there's no timeline to the injury. It's really just a matter of Fred being comfortable with where he's at and how he's feeling.
Yikes.
That's concerning.
So I was thinking about it during the break. I read the quotes. I'm up to date with it. These guys are basically doing what all good criminals do. And that's making sure that they have their tracks covered, right? They're not the guys in Goodfellas buying the pink car and parking it out front of the restaurant.
Yeah.
These guys are just being careful. They're dotting the T's, dotting the I's. They're throwing Freddie Anderson on LTIR with what has got to be, at this point, an injury they understand quite well. If Freddie Anderson really didn't have a shot at making the playoffs, do you think that these guys wouldn't be moving everything to get a goaltender right now? I thought about it. The guy to get would be Riddick, right? Mm-hmm. He's been good against the Leafs. He's not a stud, but the Flames are out of it. You could probably get him for a song. I don't really think there's a lot of other real goalies out there. If the Leafs trade for a goalie, then I'm worried. But if the Leafs are just saying things like, oh, well, we don't know and there's no timeline, yeah, because you guys are being criminals. You're cap criminals. You've always been cap criminals. That's what Lou Lamoriello taught them, right? Hey,
Pridham's the number one criminal.
Exactly. Lou is Dewis's mentor, and he was cap criminal number one. Always. Never forget Joffrey Lupul posting pictures of him snowboarding as he's on LTIR. This is what this team does. They're the cap criminals.
They created Robidoux Island.
Exactly. All they're doing is laying the tracks. They're saying to everybody else so that when all the crybaby GMs call in about the Leafs and all of a sudden Freddie Anderson's ready to rock and roll as soon as it figures out well for their cap situation, they can point back and say, look, here's Keefe saying they didn't know what was going on with his injuries. They were all in the dark. They didn't think Freddie was going to play. Freddie will be fine. Freddie's going to factor in. I'm a Freddie Anderson guy still to this day. I will say that, you know, Jack Campbell is just a... he's a more enjoyable watch.
He's a delight
fan of goaltenders.
Right,
he really is. And he just makes more athletic saves. He's got a cool personality. But I think the Big Dane still factors in. And here's what I will tell you with all definitiveness. There's nobody that they're going to add at the deadline, unless maybe Nick Foligno, because, man, just please go get Nick Foligno. But there's unlikely to be a guy that's going to be as important as getting Freddie Anderson healthy, right? So the idea that you want him on LTIR or whatever so they can go out and get something else, you want to have two goalies. Jack Campbell, even if he plays great, is obviously dealing with some kind of an injury. You want to have the insurance if he can't play through whatever it is, or if he has a bad game and you have another option to go to another guy who at times has been an all-star. So I think Freddie will be fine. I still think he factors in. I still think he gets an opportunity to win and play in games. And I think the goaltending competition or whatever it's going to look like down the stretch is probably the only real point of interest for the Leafs.
So the scary thing, though, with the LTIR situation with Freddie, though, Bunk, is if they put him on there and then they keep him on there to the playoffs, obviously, to have all the cap room, and then you have to actually lean on him. And we all know about the slow starts and, you know, how he takes a while to get warmed up. That's the huge issue, right? That's the scary part.
Sure. And here's what I would say. If he's not going until the playoffs, then he's only coming in if there's an injury to Jack Campbell. I just don't see it that way. I don't know, man. I'm starting to feel like they're not making a big splashy move. And maybe they do, but why would they get Taylor Hall? Like, why would they do that? It just doesn't make any sense. Taylor Hall doesn't make any sense for this team. It's the last thing they need is a Taylor Hall guy. They already have Galchenyuk. Yeah. And I know that people think that, oh, Galchenyuk, he's way worse than Taylor Hall. I agree. Taylor Hall is obviously a way higher upside player, but you've already had that kind of a model working with that line, and it's not
Foligno
spectacular.
Or bust, man.
Right.
That's what it is. It really is, because we've talked about this before off the air. He's the exact type of guy they need to add to this sort of team and room. They need a guy that's like a gritty guy that can maybe play in your top six, but also maybe anchor your bottom six, kill penalties, do everything. They have enough scoring. This is the type of guy they need. So I agree, no Hall. No Hall, please.
No Hall. Go out and get Foligno if you can. The problem with Foligno is you assume because his dad was a Leaf and because he's from here and he's a winner that he would want to leave Columbus, but it's always weird with guys who are captains that are those kind of guys where they want to see the job through. They don't want to abandon teams. I wonder why we haven't had more smoke as to the Foligno thing. It's been smoke that they've been interested in him from the jump, but there really hasn't been any indicator as of yet. Columbus has done a great job. Foligno's done a great job of keeping that ironclad while they've still been somewhat close to a playoff spot. But yeah, to me, Foligno's the guy. There's really not that much else out there. I don't know what you really necessarily want to overpay for. I'm a big go-all-in guy, and do whatever you can if you think it moves the needle. I've said many times, I don't care about prospects or draft picks. I care about Stanley Cups, and the Leafs have their best chance to ever get one this year since I've been alive. Mm-hmm. So go do it. But the Riley Nash move is a good one if he can play. If he can come in the playoffs, Riley Nash is pretty good. He's a solid shutdown guy. I love that move. For basically nothing, you get a lottery ticket who can step in.
And you get the LTIR.
Get the LTIR. It just gives you flexibility. That was a really nice move. I was kind of surprised that more teams didn't do that. Why someone like Boston, where they're familiar with him, wouldn't want to jump in the mix on that. But I basically, the way I'm looking at this is I'm halfway fine if they don't do anything just because it doesn't seem like there's a lot out there. And if the only option is Taylor Hall and it's actually going to cost you something of significance, then I'm definitely out on that.
So that's the thing for me. I am not by any means banging the table for Taylor Hall. I've been much in the camp you guys are in, and I'm just starting to, I guess the best way to say it is like prepare myself for how I will feel, because I feel like what's going to happen is, you just mentioned it, the lack of smoke. Feels like Foligno is not going to wave and it's not going to happen. And then they're going to be sitting there at, I don't know if it's 3 or 4 o'clock, the deadline, but at 59, right before the deadline, it's like, you can have Taylor Hall for kind of nothing. And they're like, okay, let's do it, because it does feel like Foligno's too perfect for it not to be held up by anything other than he won't come here. And I just can't wrap my head around, and I know guys who play for him like him or whatever, but it's like you get a get-out-of-jail-free card to not play for torts anymore. You get to play for an original six team that could win the cup, home-ish guy, dad played. Like, I cannot wrap my head around not wanting to do that. Yeah. And it feels like that has to be it. And the only way I think they're landing Hall is if it comes to a kind of, you can have him for basically nothing right before the deadline because nobody else is taking this. But that's the only way I foresee it. What do you make of the idea of what they're doing tonight with bumping Galchenyuk up into the Hyman spot? On one hand, I'm sitting here going, wow, what a great spot for him to find himself in. That's actually perfect. That's where you want to be, just kind of filling a role, not needing to be anything special. But it also feels like having to be Zach Hyman is setting yourself up for a little bit of disappointment.
See, I still think if they bring in a guy, Galchenyuk's out of the lineup. And that everyone's a little freaking out about how good Galchenyuk's looked. To me, he's just been fine. And that's okay. He's been fine. You can get by with Alex Galchenyuk's play. But is there anything any given night that Galchenyuk does that makes you go, wow, that's really great?
Yeah, in it.
It was the opposite of what I thought it was going to be. It's the forechecking. That's all. That's what pops every night with him. He's on the boards. He's forechecking. Sorry.
Here's what pops to me. The number. He's got a great number.
He does.
And he's got a real NHL look. A real, hey, this guy looks like a star look. And so I keep watching him thinking, ooh, you can tell why this guy would keep getting opportunities because he looks the part a lot of the times. But then overall, it's just not a lot that wows me. And so, I don't know, maybe I'm just being greedy and maybe I'm being the romantic here where I just go, I want to be wowed, but... Whose spot is he taking? Is he taking Joe Thornton? So are they going to take Joe Thornton out of the lineup in your bottom six? The guy that means so much, quote-unquote, to the room? I don't know, maybe, but that's the only guy that I could see him bumping. If they're going to play Engvall, which it looks like they are, and they're not going to go get a third-line center, I don't know. I kind of feel like they move him around or they're putting him in these spots because they're trying to do right by him. They're trying to make him wow them. And so far, he's just kind of done meh. The bar was so low, and people... Here's the other part of it. When people see guys who are reclamation projects who have been, what, he scored 30 goals, right, year two? Guys like that with pedigree who came in and there was a lot of hype. There's always a longer leash from media people, but there's always that curiosity from fans too in the way that guys are covered. So I think a lot of the Galchenyuk thing is people want him to be good, but for me anyways, I don't feel like the Tavares-Nylander line has been better. And maybe that's not his fault, but those two guys should be carrying obviously more of the load when they're healthy, but I want to feel like someone steps out onto that line and unlocks them, and I certainly don't think that the solution for the Matthews and Marner line is to put Galchenyuk. So if he's not in your top six, where is he? And he's not in my ideal top six.
So I just wanted to mention this before I ask you a couple Masters questions here. Nick Foligno has been scratched from today's game. It's an upper body injury day-to-day. He's out today, so... He's got the Maple Leafs injury. He's got the blue and white flu.
No, that guy's getting traded.
Upper body injury is in. He's too busy thinking about the Leafs. Yeah.
They already scratched Savard, so if they're scratching Foligno and they're in a playoff race and they're scratching him, upper body injury. Yeah. Guns, you already laid out the case as to why Foligno would want to do it. I have to think that that guy would be ready for it. Would want to do it, and that Toronto would be really invested in getting him because, yeah, he's perfect for here. He really is. Yeah. I don't really see the scenario where Nick Foligno is on a left wing with Tavares and Nylander, and you don't feel good about that line playing 20-plus minutes.
Yeah. Or he's sitting there going, I really wish Torts was yelling at me more. I really wish that was happening.
Dude, well, that's the other part of the Foligno thing, though, too, right, is so much of this season has been around, well, Nylander and Tavares just need more ice time. But a lot of it is... I don't think that they trust Galchenyuk or whoever else they've had on that wing, unless it's been Mikhaev, to be defensively responsible. Nylander's been better this year. Tavares has been better this year. But you had a guy like Foligno, I think you can start to match up against teams, you know? You can really say, these guys are playing 20-plus minutes. These are hard-line matches. I'm obsessed with the idea of that. I really, really hope that's it.
Yeah, me too. All right, so I got to get your take before we move to this year's Masters. What do you think about my asterisk lighter shade of green take for DJ's green jacket from November?
Seeing as DJ cost me hundreds of dollars yesterday, as the only guy on a parlay
that couldn't
win. I told
you. Tried to tell you.
I'm so upset. Yesterday was the worst. Patrick Reed somehow screwed me. Stunk it up on the back nine. Didn't do a damn thing. Broke a parlay as the last leg of one. Dustin Johnson couldn't beat Lee Westwood. I had a five-way golfer parlay smashed by Dustin Johnson not beating Lee Westwood. If it was up to me, I'd take his green jacket immediately. You miss the cut after you win? Loser. Back to choker status, Dustin Johnson.
I agree.
You're out. I'll hate you forever for this. No. There are just guys who cost you money that you'll never forget, and it's just the way they lose. Losing to Lee Westwood, when he dunked it in the water on 15, I don't think I've ever been that upset about any gambling loss in my entire life. And then he did the classic no emotion DJ where he knows he's out of it and is just like,
He mails it in, doesn't care.
Exactly. Yeah. That was it. He mailed it in for me. He didn't give me the effort. At least Rory. Imagine having Rory in a head-to-head yesterday where he's battling it, he's scrapping it, but then all of a sudden he goes, I'm going to shoot birdies. I'm going to try to get eagles. I'm back on the Rory train.
Oh,
I'm off.
Yeah,
the
come aboard.
The Hazel Rocket King, old Rory there.
I got to tell you guys something. I used to kind of be a Rory guy, and then I wasn't a Rory guy. I've been a flip-floppy Rory guy. Now that Rory is so clearly broken by the ghosts here and Spieth is starting to make his comeback, I think Rory is my only guy. I don't think I care about anybody else on the tour other than Rory at Augusta. Like, I actually have real emotional equity in this.
Wow.
Yeah, I really want it. I really want it.
So,
I'm already looking forward to next year's Masters.
Okay, so let's talk about today's, you know, it's moving day. It's going to be a spectacular day. What a leaderboard. Who are you watching today? It's Spieth, right? That's the big thing. It's all Spieth all the time, or is there something else? Are you watching my boy Willie Z?
No. Well, Willie Z has captivated me.
Oh, yeah.
Because all of a sudden, you know what I love is when a guy is good, has a good round, and you go, who the hell is this guy? And then they start throwing up the Corn Fairy stats, and you go, oh. You know? That's he's like 80% agree. So I like this kid. He looks cool. He's got a cool look. He's got cool swagger. He was unafraid. So I'm definitely in on Willie Z. I'm a big Willie Z guy. But I got to tell you, too, this is sort of the There's a couple things, actually, that I'm really interested in today, obviously. One is clearly Spieth is the number one storyline. There's no doubt about it. Two is, can DeChambeau put another one of those rounds together? Because I think that if you're Bryson, the whole thing is, yeah, I know Bryson DeChambeau can do that round where he shoots a 66 or a 67 on any golf course that he can break him. But can he do it twice in a row where he starts to feel like, hey, I can actually be the man here and all the narrative stuff is going to go away? So that's there. Clearly Justin Thomas. I don't know how you couldn't be into Justin Thomas right now and just think, okay, let me see this guy make a run. Let me see what this guy can do today. I would say those are the guys I'm most interested in as of today. Off the top of my head, that's what I was thinking about this morning when I woke up, was what were those guys going to do?
There we go. Love it, Punk. Actual coherent golf takes and opinions. I love it. Yeah. 2-3 years ago, you know, we all talk about personal growth. We were not getting this out of you two, three years ago.
I wasn't afforded the ability to, because all anyone ever wanted to talk about was Tiger Woods and whether he was going to be the greatest again. It's just enough.
Yeah, guess what? He was, and he did. That's right.
Tiger should move to F1 now.
Yeah, that's right. Take
Tiger
it over.
Move to F1. By the way, Connors and Morikawa today, huh?
Yeah. Ball That's striking. Cool. Don't bet that. It's going to be too close.
I didn't bet that. I just kind of like that too. I like that. I hope we get a lot of that today.
I'm hoping for a Corey moment today, big time.
Yeah, that'd be cool. But yeah, Justin Thomas Finau pairing, that's amazing.
Oh yeah, it's going to be horny.
That's the horny one of the day.
Horny day.
Horny matchup is those
and
two guys.
If you listen to both the golf guys when they were on with you, they told you got to be invested in Thomas. He's a lock to be in the mix this weekend.
Well, I always bet. I bet Thomas last year to be top five. I bet him again this year to do the same thing. But why does it have to be Weisberger with Spieth? Why can't we have it be a guy who I give one iota of a crap about?
That stinks. That sucks for sure.
Yeah, they should always rejig the pairings and just give us good ones. We like, him and Siwoo. That would have been fun. Or at least something.
Pull him with Z.
Willie Z.
That would have been great.
I'm putting Spieth and Z. I'm putting money on Willie Z right now. So I can cheer for Willie Z even harder. I love Willie Z.
If we had a Willie Z Spieth pairing and a Finau Thomas pairing, we wouldn't even have to watch any of the other guys today. Maybe some Corey Connors and Morikawa, and then basically they could shut the rest of it off. We could just have three channels of three featured groups, and I would be fine with that. I would be totally fine with that.
I love it. Almost as much as you love banging chains. Bunk, thanks so much for coming on, bud. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
See you, buddy.
There he goes. JD Bunk is here Monday to Friday on Good Show. We've got a little loose ends to tie up here before we give way to more programming on the station. Jay's coming up later today. One segment left. Sportsnet today.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Unfortunately for Dan Marino, we went super long with JD because we were so excited talking about the Masters and pinfoil hats. We will get to producer
Great intro
Dan Marino.
Song, though.
Great intro song. We'll bring him back next week. Want to thank him. He put together a firecracker of a program. McKee, I don't think I thanked you. You put together a firecracker of a golf show for me. We've had so much fun. We've talked a lot of golf. We've put on tinfoil hats. We've worried a ton about the Blue Jays. Mm. So, two quick questions for you. Your Masters winner, I believe you said, is Jordan Spieth, correct?
Jordan Spieth with head, Willie Z with my heart.
Okay. And who will be the new Leaf come Monday?
Nick Foligno.
I agree with you on Foligno. I think it ends up getting done. I got Justin Thomas with my heart, my head, and my wallet this weekend. That's who I'm liking down at Augusta. Man, it's going to be a great day. Obviously, Leafscape tonight. That's of importance, playing the Sens. The Oilers swept them. Congrats for you, Edmonton. Yeah. You seem very, very proud of sweeping the Senators.
But they should, because they're the best team on earth when they play the Leafs. They're the pluckiest, hardest working, just timely goals. Brady Tkachuk's the best player. You know what? Quickly before we go here, that Brady Tkachuk is going to be a real pain in the you-know-what for a long time in this league.
We've talked about Matthew a lot, and we should.
I think Brady's better.
Brady's the one.
Brady's
definitely.
And
for sure.
And I see Mark Mathot tweet about it all the time. In 2 years, boys aren't going to go anywhere near him. And it's true.
He'll be Corey Perry. He'll be Corey Perry.
Yeah, he's earning his way through the league right now, fighting everybody, and no one's going to want to go near him. So it's going to be a plucky game tonight, always is, against those Sens.
Love it. Love the show with you. I love what's coming up next on the station. RBC off the tee. Ian Leggett joining Joey Vendetta. That's up next. Thank you, Andrew Dutch Holland. Thank you, Dan Marino. And most importantly, thank you for listening.